All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Tuesday morning. And that means two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. We will play them later on. And it's 312-981-7200. That is one artist, two songs. And this is Tom's first time taking the requests over the air. So Tom Hush is my new producer. First day yesterday, and now we're here today for the second day. And so we do themes for the musical bumps. The listeners pick all the music that we listen to coming back from breaks and news and stuff. So today is two for Tuesday. So you'll get requests from people texting in, or sometimes calling in, but mostly texting in, 312-981-7200, with one artist, two songs, and then you play them back. That seems simple enough.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I want to see everybody's requests. I want to see what people are feeling tonight.
They're twofers. So two for Tuesday, that's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone. By the way, all of our regular Friday features are going to be back this week. We were off and in flux a little bit. But the Friday features are a lot of fun if you want to be a part of it. We have Straight Out of Context. And Straight Out of Context is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. nickdshow@gmail.com. Also, there's Nick D Show Spies. And that's when you listen 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time mentions me or the show in any capacity, we become a spy. We want to know about what people are talking about me. So you jot down again the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And then we play them back. And we've got You Big Dummy coming up this Friday, and we're back with Fly Jams Friday. We still have to get a name for a DJ name for Tom. So we're working on that, too. So you can text those in, or if you feel like it, throughout the morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. As I've said, we are live the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. So Apple made a big announcement yesterday. They've got a TV app. They've got a streaming service. They've got all kinds of new things. And they brought out some major league A-list celebrities to make these announcements. And we are going to talk with Ian Schur, who is executive editor at CNET.com. Obviously, that's they follow all modern tech on that website. Really terrific website. And get his thoughts on this and have some questions about how successful will the streaming services and all these other newfangled things that Apple has announced, how successful might they be? And we'll get his thoughts on it from the CNET point of view. That's coming up. And then we're going to be talking music this morning. I have a bunch of stories about it's meet the people who inspired some of the most beautiful songs ever. So there are some classic songs out there, and I've got the stories about who they were inspired by. The songwriter and who the person was that they were writing it about or writing it for. So we've got the people who inspired some of the most beautiful songs ever, and we got those stories. And I thought we'd continue to talk music. And, I don't think we've ever talked about the best movie scores of all time. So I thought we'd stay in the music camp and talk about some of the best music movie scores of all time. There have been obviously so many great ones, and we want to get your thoughts too on that. So, what are some of your favorite movie scores? and much more. As always, 312-981-7200 for talk and text and for your Two for Tuesday requests. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on Facebook. And that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. And it is a Tuesday morning here on WGN. And then we just said we said hello to Tom, who is producing this morning, as he will every morning now. And let's go into the newsroom and say hello to Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, good morning, sir.
How are you, man?
Very well.
Yeah. All right. So Hawks tonight.
Big one.
No,
I mean, the last one was big,
yeah,
too.
They're right? All big now at this point. But it's a late game, too, right? Yeah. 9 o'clock puck drop.
Yeah, that's a good point. In fact, I may not be bringing the news. What time do you think? Probably the first newscast. We can put a wager on it if you want.
I'm going to say the first newscast after the game.
Yeah. I mean, normally my first newscast is 11. I'm thinking
midnight.
Yeah, midnight probably have one.
Yeah. That would be my guess. Your first newscast would be at midnight.
Yeah, it should be an exciting game, though.
Yeah, man, they're making me a little crazy.
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah,
but
it's just been a crazy season. It has, and you know, to be, but I mean, you know, this is one of those deals where it's like it's nerve wracking because, and seriously, every single game counts at this point if they want to make the postseason.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the win, I was going to say yesterday, but our last win, the Hawks' last win, I mean, that's basically keeping the hope alive at this point.
Right.
Because I think if that would have been a loss, I think you probably could have called that game a must-win,
I would
think.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was one of those games, too, where, you know, it was Sunday night. And
Sunday night.
You know, and then it went overtime. So, mm-hmm. you know, Colorado got a point, and that wasn't cool. Right. And they ended up getting three of a possible 4 points over that weekend, and you know, so they moved up on, and that, you know, the Hawks got 2 points, but still, it's going to be kind of an uphill battle. It's going to be tough, but you know, it's exciting. It's tense,
definitely,
but it's exciting. So we'll be covering that. You're in the newsroom there all morning, Vic.
I will be here, yes sir, till 6:30 ish.
Well, we'll jump in anytime anything's happening in the world. We will jump in and tell you all about it, and also keep you posted on all things that are newsworthy. So there you go. All right, we're going to take a break here on 720 WGN, and when we come back, I'm sure you guys have probably heard about this or seen it online, you know, or saw a story about it. But there is this. There is a North Bergen High School, an English teacher at North Bergen High School, alongside with his students, did a theater version. Have you seen this, Vic? They did a play version of the movie Alien.
No, I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen this, Tom? You've seen this, obviously.
Oh yeah,
I've not watched the trailer. There is a trailer for it. Have you watched the trailer?
I did watch the trailer, and it's shockingly masterful.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that. A high school play in New Jersey turned Alien into a stage play. And Alien, by the way, if you want to feel really old, celebrating its 40th anniversary. Alien is 40 years old this year. That also means Phantasm is 40 years old this year, too, because I remember they came out right around the same time. Phantasm actually came out in April. I think the 40th anniversary of Phantasm is coming up in, like, I think 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be this coming month.
Yeah.
And then Alien, I want to say, is
May.
May, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. 79. I remember 79 was a pretty good summer it was a great summer for horror because Dawn of the Dead came out in, Dawn of the Dead was, you know, originally made in 1978, didn't get released until 1979. Summer of 1979, you could see Phantasm, you could see Alien, you could see Dawn of the Dead in the theaters. So, did I ever tell you the story about how I saw, the first time I saw Dawn of the Dead?
No.
All right. When Dawn of the Dead came out, I was 14, and I couldn't get in because it was, for people who don't know, Dawn of the Dead received an X rating when it was submitted to the MPAA because of the violence and the gore and the blood. Romero refused to cut it. He was, I'm not going to cut it. This is the movie I made. The gore is, there's a reason for it in this movie. You know, it's not just for gore. There's a statement being made about it. And it's a stylistic choice. So I'm not cutting anything. And so therefore he released it. He didn't want an X rating because at that time, you know, and as many times, X, the X rating indicates it's a porn. You know what I mean? You immediately think X-rated movie, you think pornography. And Dawn of the Dead is clearly not a pornographic movie, so he didn't want that associated with the movie, so he released it unrated, which is a hard thing to do, especially an independent film like Dawn of the Dead, because a lot of newspapers wouldn't take ads for unrated movies. You know, some places wouldn't play commercials. You know, certain markets wouldn't play commercials because it was an unrated movie. So it was a tough sell. I mean, obviously, the thing has gone on to become a masterpiece and a classic. But so, and the rule was that no one under 18 was admitted to see Dawn of the Dead, not even with your parent. It wasn't rated R. It wasn't restricted. This was unrated, but no one under 18 will be admitted to see this movie. So I was losing my mind because I wanted to see it. You know, I mean, at this point, I'm 14 years old. I'm the biggest horror fan on the planet. I've seen Night of the Living Dead at this point 500 times, and I was just dying to see this movie. So here's what happened. There used to be a drive-in in Wheeling. Tom, you're really young. You ever go to a drive-in?
Yeah, because there's one out in McHenry County.
Oh, yeah.
That actually won a contest a couple years ago to get, like, completely rehabbed, refurbed, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, they had to. They had to switch to digital.
Yeah,
right?
Switch to digital. Yeah. So I got to go a couple of times as a kid.
It's great, man. They just closed the Cascade, for God's sake, which is, you know, yeah, just really sad. But anyway, there were drive-ins everywhere when I was a kid. So anyway, there used to be a drive-in in Wheeling called The Twin, and it had three screens. I don't understand the name. It's The Twin with three screens. So it's right by Pewaukee Airport. So that's where it was located. And it had three screens. And so you go and you see a movie, and you can, like, turn around and look back at the other screen and see what movie's playing on the other screens. You know, you could just step outside and look. So what we did was, me and my friend Dan Long, my best friend growing up was a guy named Dan Long, and it's not the guy who works here, it's a different Dan Long. And so we, you know, my dad knew how much I wanted to see this movie. So we pay to see a different movie. My dad, you know, walks, because there's Dawn of the Dead is playing, and it was, oddly, it was playing with Phantasm. It was double billed with Phantasm. So we go up, and Dan and I are both 14 years old. We're in the back of the car, my mom in the passenger seat, my dad driving. And he walks up, and he buys tickets to a different movie. Like, you know, let's say that Dawn of the Dead was on screen 2. We went to screen 3. So, and he bought tickets. So we go in. So what does my dad do? He parks backwards. He pulls all the way to the back of screen 3, all the way to the back, as close as we can get to the back of the theater showing screen 2. Backs the car all the way up to the back, turns the radio on, because that's when you could get the audio from the movie through the radio. So you turn the radio to a certain, you know, station, and, you know, the audio of the movie. So tuned it in to screen 2. So that we could hear screen 2. And then Dan and I turned around and watched out the back window and watched Dawn of the Dead. So my dad...
My God.
That was my dad's idea. He's like, just go. We'll back the car all the way up, get as close as we possibly can. I'll turn the radio on. You guys turn around and watch it out the back. And then my mom and dad had lawn chairs and got out, and they watched the movies that we were in the actual screen for. But Dan and I turned around and we watched Dawn of the Dead. That's how I first saw Dawn of the Dead. So, because my dad was like, yeah, okay, I know you want to see it, but, you know, they're not going to let you in.
Yeah. And it's weird. That's one of those experiences that you just, like, a kid couldn't have nowadays. Now there's more fun things now. There are other fun things you could just go on.
But,
on,
yeah,
demand.
But it's funny, though, because, you know, and then eventually I think they were lax in allowing or carding people, because I saw it a few times. I saw it at the Davis a couple of times, and I wasn't 18 yet. But the very first time I saw it was the summer it came out, 14, watching it through the back window of the car. because we wouldn't be allowed inside the theater. Yeah. But the only thing separating us was a fence from screen 2 and Dawn of the Dead. So, yeah, that was my first time seeing Dawn of the Dead. All right. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back and I'll give you the details on this high school in New Jersey that did a stage version of Alien. The wait is over. Thursday, the Cubs open their season against Texas. Special pregame next year is here at 2:30. First pitch at 3, and that's on WGN TV. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's from the movie Alien, which, as we just mentioned, is 40 years old. God, that makes me feel old. The reason why we were... But by the way, welcome back. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here. 312-981-7200. Remember, it's 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday! One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. The reason why we're playing the theme from... One of the themes from Alien is because this is a great story. Generally speaking, creating unlicensed adaptations of film properties is frowned upon in local theater scenes, but sometimes you get away with it by creating something super rad, which is what happened in the case of Alien, the play, a full-length adaptation of Ridley Scott's Alien, helmed by Perfecto Cuervo, an English teacher at North Bergen High School, alongside his student players. So you gotta love this teacher's name, Perfecto Cuervo?
I think I had one of those at the bar last night.
What is going on there? And it is indeed fantastic. The elaborate production, built out of local materials, many of which were donated to the school, manages to nail the creepy found future aesthetic of the original Alien film down to a goofy but still kind of menacing xenomorph. There's even a trailer. They produced their own trailer, and that's fantastic, too. Entertainment Weekly reached out to some of the people involved and paint a great picture of the whole production, which went viral this weekend after Mythbusters alum Adam Savage found and tweeted about the whole dang thing and how cool it looked. Even the official Alien franchise Twitter page took notice. We are impressed, they said. It says, so are we. If you had any ambitions of going to New Jersey and seeing the unauthorized adaptation, it's unfortunately ended its run. Though after this, it might get an encore performance or two. So you saw the trailer.
Yeah. I mean, and it's clearly made by students.
Yeah.
But they go for it. They have the Nostromo uniforms.
Right.
They've got the girl playing Ripley in like a cryo tube. It's cool.
And Tom Skerritt, I know what I saw two stills. The kid who's playing Tom Skerritt's got a fake beard.
Yeah.
Got a fake beard. And I did see the xenomorph, and it's actually, they did a nice job with it.
It's not bad.
So I think that's really cool, man. I think that's really cool. I wonder, my favorite part of this, well, first of all, is that an English teacher in high school would say, hey, let's do an adaptation of Alien. First of all, that's a cool teacher. Right there. That's a cool teacher.
I wish.
Yeah. We could all wish to have teachers as cool as that. Yeah, hey, you want to do a stage adaptation of Alien, kids? So there's that. But the thing about this that I love the most is that, you know, the official Alien franchise people are like, that's awesome. They could have been jerks about it, you know, and they could have been real jerks about it and you know. Made them pay or shut it down or something like that. Because, I mean, it is, I mean, you know, it's a copyright infringement. But they're just kids. It's high school. It's cool. And they did a great job. So I was happy to see that the people involved in Alien would appreciate it.
Yeah, you got to foster the longevity of the franchise through the next generation.
Yeah.
Now you got a bunch of kids who are probably going to go through and watch all the Alien movies. Hopefully not Resurrection. But, you know, what can you do?
I didn't hate Alien Resurrection. I got to tell you, I didn't hate it. I like all four of them. I actually like all four of them. I even like the third one. I like the one that Fincher directed. I thought Fincher did a nice job with it. But, I mean, the first two are just, you know.
Stone cold.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So, anyway. So, that's out there. It closed. But maybe that it will inspire other teachers and students to do cool, you know, stage adaptations. You know, as opposed to Tartuffe. So, which I was in high school.
Can't wait to see the kids doing Glengarry Glen Ross.
Glengarry Glen Ross would be a good one. Yeah, be a good one. Okay, the news is coming. News is coming up next, and then we're going to be joined by Ian Schur, who is an executive editor at CNET.com, to talk about Apple's new announcements. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. Get them in now. We'll play them later. And again, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for Tuesday requests. We're also going to be talking music, more music this morning. We've got some of the stories behind who inspired some of the best songs of all time, those big stories, and who were the inspiration for it. And we've got some film scores that we're going to talk about as well. We'll do a little music talk this morning here on this Tuesday morning. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk, text, 2 for Tuesday requests, and more. And there you go. So we are here till 5. And right now, though, yesterday, Apple had a big event and made a big announcement, as they do very often. But this was a little bit different. This was not for, you know, the shiny new device that everybody has to get. This was announcing Apple TV app, TV Plus, an Apple Card, and not only was it different in that regard, because the actual stuff that's being announced is a little bit different than, you know, an iPad or a phone or any of that kind of stuff, but it was star-studded, this thing. I mean, it was just, every A-lister in the world seemed to be there for the presentation, and we wanted to get some thoughts from an executive editor over at CNET.com. About some of these announcements and these products and these apps and all these things that they've been announcing. And of course, we wanted to go to CNET, so we got executive editor Ian Schur to join us, and we want to welcome him to the show. Ian, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing okay. The A-listers, I couldn't get over how many of them there were either, including Big Bird, which I think is the biggest A-lister there is.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that when we go down the list. Ian, how long have you been with CNET?
I've been there for a little under 5 years now. Came from the Wall Street Journal before that, and Reuters, and then now I'm at CNET and covering all sorts of stuff. It's a fun gig.
Yeah, yeah. Have you always been interested in you know that kind of electronic stuff? Tech news?
I mean, consumer technology has always been interesting to me. I think partially because, unlike a lot of other industries, this is stuff that really impacts our daily lives. Like the phone, for example, has really upended the way that we live, for good and for bad, right? From screen time to giving me access to all the world's information in my pocket, right? No one debates anything that you can learn on Wikipedia these days anymore. We never debate who's in a movie and stuff like that, like we used to beforehand. So the impacts of the stuff are really fascinating to me. And of course, I love trying to understand how technology is changing our culture, right? The idea of stuff like how troll culture is affecting our politics, or the way that technology is helping people who are blind, and all sorts of just really amazing stuff. And that's what keeps me really interested in all of this.
How often do you write for CNET?
I am on there every day, man.
Yeah. And you try to do a lot of different angles on technology that's maybe a little bit different than any other places?
I think so. I mean, what CNET, I think, has always brought to the table that's different is that it has really offered people an understanding of how technology is trying to change our world instead of just talking about the technology itself. And that's really key. And, you know, there are some examples of that. For example, you know, on CNET, we've written about how technology played a central role in the migrant crisis in Europe, which was really fascinating. I didn't even know it until we started reporting about it. Or even about how technology is being used to help get rid of landmines in Angola. Different areas of the world are trying to create their own Silicon Valleys and what that means. And just all of these really fascinating stories that, again, they're impacting real people's lives. It's not just technology for technology's sake. And I think that's really valuable and important.
Yeah. Okay, great. And everybody can check out all the stuff at CNET.com, where you are an executive editor and you contribute pretty much every day. So that's great. Now,
yep.
Ian, have you ever been to any of these infamous Apple announcement shows, as I call them?
Oh, absolutely. I've been to far too many to count. Especially, I used to cover Apple for the Wall Street Journal, so I'm an old hand at a lot of the Apple stuff.
So what do you think? Is it, I mean, because they just keep getting bigger and there's more interest in everything. What's it like to be at one of these announcements?
You know, it's really fascinating. there's a lot of excitement, of course, by a lot of people there, right? And partially, it's not just the press. They actually bring in the employees who worked on a lot of this stuff. So there's a lot of energy in the room every time, you know, especially when you're at the developer conferences. There are 5,000 people there, and all of them, you know, they make their living making apps for Apple. So they're super excited. And, you know, these people who nobody knows who these executives are, but when they get on stage, they are rock stars, right? So it's really interesting to be at these things because it's almost like being at a stage show.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're very well performed. You know, I've been at a lot of press conferences, both boring and interesting. And Apple is among one of the most they are down to the minute. They've trained themselves really well. They keep them interesting. By the time you're done, you've never yawned. you know, they keep it really exciting throughout the whole thing. And whether or not you like Apple, you can always appreciate that they put on a really interesting show every time they ask for your attention.
It's funny because I don't, you know, I mean, I just watch the stuff through television or through the internet. I've never seen a full conference or anything like that, or, you know, but it always seems like an event. It has that feel to it, and it always seems different. Like, every time I watch it, I'm like, that's a little bit different than any kind of other press conference that I've ever witnessed at least parts of.
And what's interesting is they sweat the small stuff. And I mean, literally, like, I remember when the iPhone 5S was announced, which I guess is around 2012. And it was really interesting. They brought it up on a pedestal that rose up from the ground, and they had a shining beam light right on it. And it was like, it was, you know, it was almost like it was this otherworldly device that had suddenly come out of the ground.
Right, right.
And what was really fascinating is that everyone got a beam of light in their face for a second. Like, they turned it at just the right angle that the entire room, right, every angle, got a beam of light at them. So they understood that this was imbued with special godlike powers. And it's just like those kind of things that really, it blows you away how much thought and effort and real attention to detail went into making that happen.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, they brought out the big guns for this one. Now, were you there yesterday?
I was not. I was up in San Francisco, which is about, I'd say, 20 miles or so away from Apple's spaceship-like headquarters, and I was watching over a live stream.
Gotcha.
So we had reporters there who shared a lot. You know, one of the things I think was that the things that that we didn't get to see on TV was that there were many more celebrities in the room, including Captain America. Chris Evans was there. So a lot of people were very excited by that.
Well, I'm looking at this roundup of people. J.J. Abrams, Steven Spielberg, Damien Chazelle, Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, Steve Carell, and, of course, you mentioned the great Big Bird. And more, and they were there to announce these new things, and so they're Apple's going streaming. And how long have they been planning this move, you think?
Oh my gosh, they've been playing this for a long time. There have been rumors about this going back years, and part of the reason is that Apple is going through a really interesting change. You know, for years, they've sold us these devices, and, you know, you have a friend among you. Everyone's got it. The friend who's like, Apple's too expensive. Don't buy their stuff. And part of the reason Apple charges so much is that they say they're able to offer a better experience. They're able to offer more high quality and all of that. And all of that can be debated. CNET, we believe that's true through our reviews. But one of the things that's interesting is that we have gotten to a point where Apple has hit a limit. They've sold as many iPhones to all of us as they pretty much can. We're not seeing a much more growth in the number of iPhones they're selling, which means that now they need to figure out what's next, what comes after the iPhone. And what they're doing is they're taking all that money they made off of all of us, and they're throwing it toward coming up with a bunch of TV shows and possibly movies and news and all sorts of video games and all sorts of other stuff to get us really interested in paying a monthly subscription to get high-quality content. So they're not just going to sell us a device anymore. And that is a massive change from who they were even just 6 months ago.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the shows that Apple TV Plus is announcing. A lot of big names, as we mentioned, who were there. A lot of really interesting projects. What were some of the standouts for you that you think are going to draw people into this to subscribe?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. You know, first off, they're doing two things with TV, right? One is they're creating their own shows, just like Netflix has, like Orange is the New Black and House Cards and all that stuff. And then in Stranger Things, of course. And then on, and they're also doing a bundling of all these other things like HBO and Showtime and all that stuff that you can buy under one subscription. We don't know how much they're going to charge for any of this. So we're still learning a lot, and they're still to be revealed. But of the shows that they announced, I think it was really fascinating. They've got Oprah, man. They've actually got Oprah. And she's going to do a couple of things. There were a couple of documentaries announced about immigration and, you know, a lot of these kind of large, very uncomfortable conversations that we're having in this country, which I think is interesting. Apple is not shying away from it. And then also, they've got people like Jason Momoa, right, who, you know, Aquaman and the guy from Game of Thrones, who kept his shirt on. I don't understand why he did. But, you know, they've got all these different really fascinating things that they're doing. Steve Carell, Reese Witherspoon, and Jennifer Aniston are doing this kind of comedy, it seems, about morning news. They've got, you know, another one out there that's going to be looking. I mean, they're just all over the place. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, just like Netflix, when they first started doing this stuff, a lot of people were like, man, this is a lot of stuff being thrown at the wall. Let's, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And then what we learned was that Netflix actually was like sly like a fox. They really had figured out that there are a bunch of different people who want a bunch of different things. And while you may not be interested, a lot of your friends might be interested. So, you know, while I may not be interested in Jason Momoa, unless he has a shirt off, some of my other friends might be. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
You know, and they're covering all kinds of things. They've got reality shows. They've got dramas. They've got comedies. And, you know, there are, you know, M. Night Shyamalan is going to be doing a drama series. I mean, there's so many big names that are involved. And there's an Emily Dickinson miniseries that stars Hailee Steinfeld. So, you know, I mean, they pulled out the big guns for sure.
Yeah, and they even have a kids show, right? So there's all sorts of different angles they're going at. And, you know, part of this is throwing stuff at the wall, right? They have to learn. But, like, one of the things that I think is really fascinating is that as the TV industry has grown and changed over time, the thing we've learned is that people really want different things. You know, it's not like it used to be with network television where everyone watched Bob Newhart and then Taxi and then Bewitched and we were all happy.
Right.
You know, it turns out that everyone wants different stuff, right? I you know, and you know, I might love Stranger Things, but my wife doesn't care about that.
Right.
She wants to watch this other thing.
Right.
And I think that's really cool. And it allows for, you know, the other thing is that there's a lot of money that Apple has to really test out different stuff.
Sure.
And you may find that you really love what they're doing. You may find that you hate what they're doing. And that's, I think it's great that we're experimenting. I mean, this is like one of the best times for television to be alive. So I'm excited just by that.
Okay. All right, Ian, hang on, okay?
Okay.
Hold on a second. Ian Schur is with us. He is an executive editor at CNET.com. Apple, again, making another massive announcement. This time they've got a TV bundle package thing that they're doing, subscription, and a subscription service, a streaming service with original programming and some big names. And they've also got some other stuff they announced at the press conference yesterday. And we'll get more details about that right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Tom Hush is our producer. As my producer, and he was choosing music bumps, and I would just like to let you know that right now, every straight man my age is picturing Phoebe Cates coming out of a swimming pool right now. I just want you to know that you're responsible for that. So I just wanted to let you know. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 2 for Tuesday coming up later. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. We are talking with Ian Schur. He's an executive editor at CNET.com, obviously covering all the tech news. And the tech news is big because Apple made another announcement, had an all-star press conference. And as big and as entertaining as most of those press conferences are, they're going to have a streaming TV service, subscription TV packages, and more. And we wanted to get Ian's thoughts on some of this stuff. Ian, welcome back.
Hey.
Hey,
how you doing?
You know, I'm good. You know, Disney just announced that they were going to have a service, and they've got now, Disney owns everything, because they've got, you know, they've got all the Star Wars movies, they got all the Marvel films, they now have 20th Century Fox, and so this is going to be an incredible service, and it's Disney+. Is that going to be an issue, or is Apple going to stand up to Disney, you think?
Well, I mean, it, at least in name, right? It's called Apple TV Plus. So
yeah,
it doesn't get more head-to-head than that. You know, I think that Apple and Netflix and everyone's looking at Disney and being like, wow, that is, that's going to be something else, right? I mean, the idea that they're going to mine Star Wars and they're going to take stuff from Marvel and all this stuff and do all these, you know, special TV shows that are only available if you pay that subscription. I mean, that's going to be a killer offering.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really fascinating to see how people compete. By the way, they're not alone, right? Hulu has The Handmaid's Tale, which is very well received.
Yep.
Netflix obviously has Stranger Things, which is one of their most popular shows ever. Even CBS, which, by the way, owns CNET, they have Star Trek, right? Which, you know, all the nerds out there, including me, are really excited.
And they've also got Jordan Peele's reboot of The Twilight Zone, which I'm unbelievably excited about that. Yeah.
Let's sell more of that. Absolutely. So, you know, it's really like there's a lot of fascinating stuff going on. So can Apple compete? Look, they've got billions of dollars to try. And one thing's for sure, they're willing to at least try. And I think that when you see the star power they were able to take out on this thing, you know, J.J. Abrams, Oprah, and all these different people, you know, if they don't find one winner in that, I will be shocked.
Yeah, I agree. Now the other things that they announced, let's talk a little bit about those. Like, tell everybody about Apple Arcade.
Yeah, so Apple Arcade's a different idea altogether. So, you know, the App Store right now, if you look at the top apps for gaming out there, and there are about 300,000 games on the App Store today, most of the top games are stuff like Candy Crush and Clash of Clans. These games that oftentimes, you know, you play them, you download them for free, but then they charge you extras for power-ups and all sorts of stuff like that. And some people are really annoyed by that. So what Apple said is, okay, wait a minute, let's come up with another idea. And what they're doing is they're charging a subscription. Again, we don't know how much yet. We're going to find out by the fall. And what they're going to do is offer you high-end, high-quality games. They're going to actually fund the development of some games. So now they're becoming like Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo by actually helping to develop real games. And they say that when you pay a subscription, that is it. That is the only thing you pay. You get the full game, all the power-ups, everything you want to play. And I think that's going to be really fascinating because it answers some of the concerns that that people have who complain about having to pay extra for being able to play a game. And also, it's kind of their effort to start taking on Microsoft and Sony. You know, the iPhone is becoming more capable every day. And every generation, the chip is supposedly more capable than ever before. There was one test that I saw that said that the chip in the iPhone XS, which is the most recent one that came out in September, is rivaling that of a computer. And if that is the case, then if they can put their full might and muscle behind making a game that shows that, they can actually start competing against the Xbox. That is a fascinating idea. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with Apple Arcade going forward.
Okay. And then they're also offering the Apple News Plus, which they're offering subscriptions to magazines, which doesn't that seem like a step backwards in technology?
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
You know, look, there are about 300 or so publications in there, including, by the way, the Los Angeles Times and the Wall Street Journal.
Mm.
And what they're saying is that they want to really help the news industry. And what they're doing is instead of what Facebook and all these other people did, which is that made it easier for free news services to get your attention through clickbait and all this other stuff that turned out to be really bad. What they're saying is, look, we're gonna have vetted, high quality journalism here. National Geographic, Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, even CNET Magazine in there. And what you do is you pay $9.99 a month, and you get access to all of these things. And it's a really interesting idea. You know, look, the idea that anyone is trying to encourage and entice people to pay for journalism, I am two thumbs up on. The question is, will people really want to put their money where their mouth is?
Yeah.
You know, people complain about bad journalism all the time. They complain about clickbait articles. They complain about, you know, how could we have been all fooled by the Russian interference and all that? Well, if you start paying for journalism, you know what you're getting. And I think that's going to be the real question is, are we all willing to start paying for it like we did start paying for music through Spotify and Apple Music? Like we are paying for TV through all these different services. Will we pay for journalism, too? That's a big, big question.
It is.
But I hope we find an answer.
Yeah. Well, at least they've got this one priced. So,
yes, exactly. And it's available today. You can actually download the latest update for the iPhone and the iPad. Try it out, you know, and it's a really fascinating, please read CNET Magazine. It's a fascinating idea. And, you know, we'll see.
Well, to me, the craziest thing that they announced is the Apple Card. Now, so now Apple is getting into credit cards, but like it, this is like a titanium card, and even a credit card that Apple designs looks sexy. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. It's got the Apple logo. It's got your name engraved in it. There's no expiration date. There's no signature. There's none of that stuff. It's just like this silver blank titanium sexy little credit card. How is that going to be used, the Apple Card?
You know, it's really fascinating. So what they do is that they want to entice you, by the way, to never pull out the credit card if they can. So they actually, what they're doing is they're offering, first off, there's no annual fees. And they say you're going to get 3% back on stuff you buy from Apple. No surprise. You'll get 2% back on most everything else you use Apple Pay for,
yeah,
which means you're using your watch or your phone or your tablet. And you'll get 1% back if you use the card itself, which means don't do it. So what they're doing is they're saying, look, you know, we want to try and offer something different. And a lot of the idea here is to actually get you to have access to a more secure card. They say it's much more private. They're not going to sell your information to other people, which I don't know if you knew. A lot of the credit card companies make extra money by selling the information, yeah, about what you buy.
Right.
And they said that they're going to have stuff like giving you spending trends and stuff like that, a lot like what Mint.com does, for example. And then what they're going to do is also they try to make it more secure by not having you have an actual credit card number. It changes quite frequently and automatically. And by doing that, they're able to say, look, you know, you don't have to worry about security as much. You don't have to worry about all these other issues that exist. And because Apple Pay is so well, you know, received already, I think they said 70% of the United States uses it, 99% of Australia uses it, that because of all of that, you know, you don't have to worry about a lot of the problems that exist around credit card fraud and all that type of stuff.
Right.
And look, it might be interesting if you buy a lot of Apple products. It certainly makes sense there. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they're able to actually really get you interested in something like that, because them becoming a bank is like, I mean, again, this is an iPhone company, and now
right,
they're selling me TV shows, video games, and bank products. I never thought they'd do this.
It's what's really funny is I watched the Daily Show before I came into work last night, as I do pretty much every night, and they did it. Trevor Noah did a quick bit on this about the press conference and everything. When he got to the Apple Card and they showed the footage of it, I found it fascinating. But what Trevor Noah said, and I want to give him full credit because I didn't want to say this while giving him full credit, he says, Apple now has taken so much of our money that we're borrowing our own money from them to spend more
you
money on Apple
he's
products.
Not wrong. He's not wrong.
No, he's so what has been the response, your colleagues and things like that, to these announcements and to these products that that Apple's throwing out there in the services?
There's a lot of wait and see, and part of that is because of price. You know, we have seen that we have been tracking this cord cutting phenomenon, right, where people have been cutting away from cable companies for a long time. My wife actually made me one of the first cord cutters when she refused to get a cable subscription to feed my CNN addiction back then, back in 2007. And ever since then, I have been living on the streaming service world. And we've been tracking all of them. We have this really great spreadsheet on CNET that actually tracks every one of the streaming services. You can decide which one is worth it to you. And one of the things that we don't have the answer for is a big, big question mark over price for Apple. And until we know that answer, we don't know how to feel. You know, we know that Apple's got a lot of star power. Great, fine. But if that thing costs too much, nobody's going to use it.
Yeah.
And that is going to be really the key here, is are they going to price it correctly? The other thing that we're unsure about is how much marketing power Apple is going to put behind it. You know, Apple is, they are expert marketers. And if they don't put a lot of marketing oomph behind something, we know they don't take it seriously. So the question will be how much pressure they put behind this. And until we know those things, it's hard to get excited about something we have these such big questions about.
Yeah. Well, you just mentioned where you guys track the streaming services. Where can people check that out? It's at cnet.com, but is there like a direct link to it?
Yeah, I mean, if you usually I tend to find that Google is really useful for this. So if you type in CNET and then you say all the streaming services get compared, that'll usually lead you directly to the correct link. And it's great. We have this amazing spreadsheet. And we even have a Google Doc that we click to in there so you can help you figure it out yourself. And you can decide, do I want this streaming service, that streaming service? Which channels do I want? You can actually, we really try to help you find the right one for you, because there are so many of them out there right now. There's Sling, there's DirecTV, there's PlayStation View, there's YouTube, I mean, Hulu, all these people. And it's almost impossible to keep track of what they offer. Even me, as a professional, I have trouble with it. So it's really good that we have these services out there for you.
That's great. Everybody can check that out at CNET.com. Ian, real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your insight. And it was fun talking to you. And whenever we get some more tech news, maybe we'll get you back on the air with us. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, Ian, thanks very much.
Take care.
There you go. Ian Schur, everybody, executive editor at news at CNET.com. Apple made the big announcement. Apple TV app, Apple TV Plus, Apple Card, all this stuff brought out some major, major A-listers and big guns to do the press conference and, of course, drew a ton of attention. So we got all the latest on that, and we'll keep you updated, too. All right, let's take a quick break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus is where Chicago comes for podcasts.
Here's what's going on with WGN Plus.
The Loop has seen a ton of development in recent years, and Amy Guth talked with Greg Hines about the newest research center stemming from the South Loop on The Daily Gist. R. Kelly's lawyer joined the crew on Legal Face-Off, and John Cass remembers the time he got fired from the Tribune. Look him up. WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. WGN News Time is 203, and here is Vic Vaughn.
Thank you, Nick. Good morning. Fair skies and 27 degrees at O'Hare. Chicago mayoral candidates Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot took part in another debate, this one hosted last night by WGN-TV. Here's Preckwinkle on why she thinks she hasn't gotten a single endorsement out of the crowded field of candidates who unsuccessfully ran in the February municipal election.
Endorsements that really count are the endorsements of the voters on Election Day. And I've been very encouraged. We had 1,500 people at a rally this weekend. I've been to churches and well-received in a number of community events.
Lightfoot has now picked up endorsements by seven of the candidates she ran against last month. Lightfoot says for her it's more about what she's hearing in the neighborhoods.
They want to change, but they didn't think that it was truly possible. I think what people understand is that the status quo has failed them.
The runoff election is next Tuesday, April 2nd. Early voting's already underway. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has blocked an attempt aimed at passing a non-binding resolution to get the Mueller report released to the public immediately. Minority Leader Chuck Schumer put forth the measure.
The Justice Department has declined even to say how many pages the report includes, as if that were some sort of state secret.
The House approved a similar resolution 2 weeks ago. Republican Congressman Steve Scalise accuses Democrats on Capitol Hill of misleading Americans when they said there was evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. He hinted that Democrats' bias compromised the FBI.
I'm very concerned. I want the FBI's integrity to be fully restored, but they've got some house cleaning to do still. And I think that's a concern a lot of Americans have today as well.
Scalise argues that Democrat leaders made unsupported claims of evidence against the president in hopes of removing him from office. And high-profile lawyer Michael Avenatti's out on bail this morning. He was arrested yesterday at a law firm where he'd gone to meet with executives from Nike. He's accused of embezzlement. Separate cases in California and New York allege he embezzled money from a client and then tried to extort millions of dollars from Nike. He says he's confident he'll be fully exonerated. Avenatti, of course, represented Stormy Daniels in her lawsuit against President Trump. He's also representing several clients with accusations of abuse against Chicago singer R. Kelly. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Hello, goodbye, girl.
Hi, everyone. It's Judy Pilak, the Goodbye Girl, sponsored by Goodwill. Well, after being cooped up these last few months, it's now time to get out and head over to Goodwill for everything you need to spring ahead. I love the look of a flower pot sitting in an old wood chair in my side porch, but mine is now falling apart. Time for a new one, and there are plenty at Goodwill. I love a lamp on my front porch to set just the right mood in the evening, but The weather does take a toll, so I'll start looking now for that perfect basin shade. And all my outdoor seating could use a little spiffing up, so pillow please. Goodwill has a ton, and they can turn your boring chair, loveseat, or bench into an explosion of color and texture. No need to look for matching ones. Different patterns, colors, and sizes will make your outdoor furniture pop. Check out this month's Goodbye Girl for more ideas on springing forward with Goodwill. It's all at WGNRadio.com.
That old car is worth money. Visit VictoryAutoWreckers.com for an instant quote. Victory will tow no matter what condition your car's in. Victory buys vehicles every day, including nights and weekends, and you'll get cash on the spot. Go to VictoryAutoWreckers.com for more information or save money by fixing up your car with used parts. Go to VictoryAutoWreckers.com to search their inventory. VictoryAutoWreckers.com.
VictoryAutoWreckers.com.
WGN Sports, the White Sox beat the Diamondbacks 6-3 in Cactus League Baseball yesterday. Cubs beat the Red Sox 3-2. All four clubs play each other again later today. Blackhawks visit Arizona tonight. The Hawks still fighting for that final wild card spot in the Western Conference. 5 points back from the Coyotes. 7 games left in the season. Chris Bowden has your pregame at 8:30. John and Troy have the call tonight at 9 on 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com. The Bulls visit Toronto tonight. WGN traffic at your expressways and tollways are moving along without delay. We still have 2 investigations going on in the city. Shooting investigations on the west side at Madison near Laramie and on the northwest side at Grand Avenue near Division. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app. Approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Calmer winds today than we felt on Monday. We'll be under sunny skies today. Afternoon highs in the mid-40s. By tonight, temperatures fall back into the 20s inland, low 30s near the lake. Wednesday, a sunny start, then clouds build, high of 58 by Wednesday afternoon. Right now, fair skies and 27 at O'Hare. It's 33 at the lakefront downtown. I'm Vic Vaughn in the WGN newsroom, ready to join the conversation live whenever a story changes on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Give me a ticket for an airplane. I ain't got time to take no fast train. Oh, the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter. I don't care how much I've got to spare.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are going to be talking about the topic here that we're going to be talking about here is people who inspired some of the most successful and beautiful songs of all time. You ever wondered about the backstory of certain songs? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you know some of the stories behind these songs, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. And that's two for Tuesday right there. So who requested that?
I believe that was Squat.
Squat. So we'll get to hear another Joe Cocker tune. So that's part of the... part of the Two for Tuesday. You can get your requests in now, right now at 312-981-7200. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. So get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Okay, so do you guys ever wonder about the story behind certain songs? So we've got some of the great stories behind some of these songs here. You always wonder like who inspired them and what was and who was the inspiration for certain songs. And then we've got some great ones here. Songwriters are often inspired by the people in their lives, and many successful songs were inspired by real people. Sometimes knowing the backstory of a song can make it all the more moving, and sometimes the people who've inspired a well-loved song are incredibly surprising. The stories behind our favorite songs are well worth telling, and knowing them can enhance a beloved song forever. So, which people inspired which hit? Do you know which chart topper who inspired these songs? Okay, so 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you guys know any of those stories about, you know, the inspiration behind some songs and you want to share them with us, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right. So did you, Tom, did you know any of these, or do you know any songs that some of your favorites or whom they were inspired by?
Well, I know the Layla story for sure, because right. That was Patty Boyd, right? He wrote it for Eric Clapton wrote that for Patty Boyd, and him and George Harrison were having a little bit of a feud over her.
Right. Yeah, which is kind of a classic, which is pretty much of a classic story right there. But let's go through some of these right here. How about Wild World by Cat Stevens? Wild World by Cat Stevens. And Cat Stevens and actress Patty Darbinville dated for approximately 2 years during the late 60s. And while 2 years may not seem like a lot, their time together inspired several songs by the talented Stevens, including the self-explanatory Patty Darbinville, which kind of gives away who the song's about, as well as Wild World. Stevens wrote Wild World after the two broke up. Do we have a little piece of Wild World, Tom?
Now that I've lost everything to you, you say you want to start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Maybe I'm grieving, but if you want to leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear, but then a lot of nice things turn bad out there.
So I love Cat Stevens. I love Cat Stevens, and that's a great song. Now, are you familiar with Patty? You're too young to know who Patty Darbinville is, right?
Yeah, no idea.
Okay, she is an actress. Was had a pretty good career. Appeared in I think maybe the height of her career would have been, you know, like the late 70s. But she is, by the way, in a movie that younger people might be familiar with. But anyway, I'll get to that story in a second. But here's what Cat Stevens said. It was one of those chord sequences that's very common in Spanish music. I turned it around and came up with that theme, which is a recurring theme in my work, which has to do with leaving, the sadness of leaving, and the anticipation of what lies beyond. Now, Patty Darbinville is in a movie that you might recognize. Have you seen Real Genius?
Is that Val Kilmer?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Really?
She's in that.
Okay. Who is she in that?
She plays, when Val Kilmer is given the tour of the facilities that he might be working for after he graduates, she's the one who, she sleeps with all the geniuses. She's the one who, during the tour, takes him and leads him in. That's Patty Darbinville.
Okay,
but she's been in a lot of stuff.
I can picture her now.
Yeah,
I can see her.
Now this one's pretty. I thought this one was pretty obvious, but the explanation here is a little bit different. Uptown Girl by Billy Joel. Now, Uptown Girl by Billy Joel seems to be an obvious one because Christie Brinkley is in the video for it, and at the time they were married or about to get married. But here's the interesting thing about what they wrote here. Billy Joel says he was inspired to write Uptown Girl after an evening hanging out with two of the world's biggest supermodels back in the 80s and one of the most successful female musicians ever. Christie Brinkley, Whitney Houston, Elle McPherson, whom he was dating at the time. Initially, Joel stated McPherson was his inspiration, but he later ended up marrying Brinkley, who also appeared as the main character in the song's video, so it's hard to say whether it was McPherson. He dated Elle McPherson, too?
That's just not fair.
What the hell, man? Wow. So, do we have a little of the Uptown Girl here? The video. Have you seen the video for this song?
Yeah, it's It's just very of its time, but also timeless.
No, that's early 80s, man. I mean, there's just no question about it. But like he's a gas station attendant or a mechanic or something, and then she's got like a beautiful dress on, and if I remember, a hat.
Yeah.
And he's dancing around trying to convince her that like she should date him. And I like that song though.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I like that song. And I have some issues with Billy Joel, some of Billy Joel's stuff, but I enjoy that song. Yeah.
It's too catchy to hate.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But wow, he dated Elle McPherson too. Wow. All right. Here we're talking about the backstories behind songs, and if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, and we're talking about we're going to meet some of the people who inspired some of the great songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
That whole Billy Joel album of that time was doo-wop inspired. It was total 50s. Tell Her About It, Uptown Girl.
Right.
The Longest Time.
Right.
It was all doo-wop. That album is kind of a doo-wop tribute album. Anyway, but I called to, not talking about Billy Joel, but Led Zeppelin. A lot of people don't realize that Song Remains the Same was a tribute album to other bands.
Okay. You mean in terms of you talking about the live album?
No. The Song Remains the Same. Hold on. House is the Holy, I apologize.
Oh, House is the Holy. Okay.
Yeah. Because The Grunge is a tribute to James Brown, who's still very potent back in those days.
Right.
He was not, you know, like, it wasn't 1983, it was 1973.
Right.
But he was still quite an act. And The Ocean is obviously the Beach Boys. No Quarter is a tribute to Black Sabbath. Let's see, what else was there on there? Oh, obviously, Jamaica, which a lot of people call Dire Maker, but
right.
It's a joke. But the wife went on holiday. She went to Jamaica.
Right.
I goofed up that joke. But anyway, did you force her? No. All right. You get the idea.
I get it.
That was reggae. And I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. I covered The Ocean, The Grunge, Jamaica.
Right.
But you get the idea.
I do.
No Quarter, Black Sabbath.
Right, you got that one.
Okay.
All right.
I'm trying to think of some other songs.
Over the Hills, Over the Hills and Far Away.
I don't know who that is.
Okay.
Oh, and of course, Pink Floyd. Four of their albums are all about Syd Barrett. Going
right.
Crazy.
Right. Okay, thanks, John.
All right, you're welcome.
Buddy. Take care. All right, we got a break here. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're learning about the stories behind classic songs and the people that inspired these songs. There's a lot of fun backstories here on these songs. If you got any, 312-981-7200, talk or text. The wait is over. Thursday, the Cubs open their season against Texas. Special pregame next year is here at 2:30. The first pitch is at 3 on WGN-TV.
Seems I've got to have a chance to see you. Every night I have a stranger's dream. Impressing.
Welcome back, everybody. Squat's second request is this one for Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Call or text in. Text in your requests. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. Make sure you we'll give you credit on the air as to who dedicated or who requested those songs. And get them in now. One artist, two songs, Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we're talking music this morning. Got some great stories, some backstories on some very popular songs. And who were the people that inspired some great songs? And if you have any that you want to jump in with, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Some of the stories behind songs are pretty popular that we've known in lore. And we've got a few of those that we're going to talk about. But there are others that... That I had no idea. Like, for instance, I didn't know that Wild World by Cat Stevens was about Patty Darbinville. Had no idea. Here's the next one. 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover by Paul Simon. Paul Simon married Peggy Harper in 1969 and wrote quite a few good songs about her, or at least that mention her. The song Train in the Distance from his 1983 album Hearts and Bones was about their relationship and eventual breakup. And the Betty mentioned in Call Me Al is based on the French composer Pierre-Louis Joseph Boulez mishearing Simon and Harper's names and calling them Betty and Al instead of Peggy and Paul. When Simon and Harper split up, he wrote 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover and went on to marry Carrie Fisher. Let's hear a little bit of this one. Inside your head, she said to me, the answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you in your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. She said, it's really not my habit to intrude. Furthermore, I hope my meaning won't be lost or misconstrued. But I'll repeat myself at the risk of being crude. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. There you go. That was one of Paul Simon's biggest hits, too. That one. So, Peggy Harper. And they were married for a while. And then they left. And he left her and wrote 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. And then he married Carrie Fisher. And then they got divorced. You know who Paul Simon's married to now? And he's been married to her for a really long time.
Not Art Garfunkel.
Nope. Edie Brickell.
Huh.
Do you know Edie Brickell? Edie Brickell had a she had a hit in the '80s, and why am I blanking on it? Oh man, Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians was the name of the band. They had one big hit. Can you Google Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians? I can't believe I'm playing. It was a really big hit too. I think maybe she had two or three hits. Two of them were pretty. The other two, if she had, were minor.
Is it What I Am?
What I Am? Yes. Is What I Am. That's who he's married to.
He's married to her?
Yeah, he's been married to her for a long time.
Wow, good. Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah, that's it. What I Am. I can't believe I forgot that song. But yeah, I think they're still married. I know that I remember when they got married, because there's a significant age difference between Edie Brickell and Paul Simon. And I remember when they first announced that they were like dating or they were going to get married, people were like, what? Hey, if they've been together this long, that's, you know, good for them.
Yeah, it looks like they're still married.
Yeah?
Yeah, they married in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
They have three children.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they did both get arrested at the same time on a domestic disturbance charge.
They did.
But nothing happened.
Oh, okay.
Nothing came of it.
Okay. Well, he's had some. I didn't know that Paul Simon had such a, you know, sort of a spotty background with the ladies here. I didn't know he was divorced. I didn't know he's been divorced three times. Wow. No wonder the guy writes so many songs. Jeez. Okay, so this next one has been talked about and argued about and thought about for years, and it's You're So Vain by Carly Simon. This is one of those classic songs that has a backstory that everybody talks about or tries to figure out whether it's, you know, who it is. And this has been going on for years. Ever since Carly Simon's 1971 song You're So Vain, you probably think this song is about you, hit record stores and radio stations. Everybody's been dying to know, who is this song about? Well, Simon originally stated that the song was about, quote-unquote, men, and not about any one specific man. She revealed in years later that the song was written about three specific men and not about, quote-unquote, men in just general. Well, who are these men? Well, after the many clues that Simon has left for fans over the years, it's pretty safe to say that one of the men is Simon's ex-lover, Warren Beatty, and another is, as of yet, an unidentified man named David. As for David and the third man's identities, well, Simon has revealed them to a few close confidants, including Howard Stern and Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is a close confidant of Carly Simon's?
Honestly, I was a little bit more shocked by Howard Stern, but
Now, Howard Stern has a way of getting things out of people. You ever listen to his interviews?
Yeah.
He gets people to say stuff on the air that they normally probably wouldn't say. But it may be a while yet before their identities become common knowledge. Now, here's the thing. I had heard Warren Beatty. I also heard Mick Jagger. And one of the other clues about this, and we can play it after the news. One of the other clues is that Mick Jagger sings backup vocal on the song.
Oh.
So, but everybody, for so many years, everybody thought it was Warren Beatty. Like, the first thing everybody thought was Warren Beatty. But she says it's about three men, somebody named David, an unidentified person who may or may not be Mick Jagger. And you can hear him during the chorus. If you listen really closely, you can hear Mick Jagger singing You're So Vain on the in the background. But that's one that's been hotly debated for years and years and years. Like, who is You're So Vain about? So, all right. Hey, all right, let's take a break. If you guys want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. If you have any backstories behind some classic songs or who they were inspired by, we'd love to hear from you or talk to you or text you. 312-981-7200. News is up next. Two for Tuesday continues. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get your requests in. 312-981-7200. Who requested the Prince version of Nothing Compares to You?
That's coming to us from Leany.
Leany. Okay. That song was originally written. Well, I mean, Prince wrote it, but it was originally written for a band called The Family, and that was the original version of it. Was their version. And and then, of course, obviously, Sinead O'Connor as the version that was most popular. And then, of course, that Prince was, that was his version of Nothing Compares to You. So, Prince. So we get a Prince twofer here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in. All right. Let's see. We before the break, we were talking about, here's what we're talking about. And I would love to hear from you guys. Talk or text, please jump in. We're talking about people who inspired some great songs and the backstories behind some good songs. And if you've got any, 312-981-7200 for talk or text. We were talking about You're So Vain by Carly Simon, which has been one of the most hotly contested songs in terms of who the song is really about. And it's narrowed down to three guys that Carly Simon has talked about. One of them for sure is Warren Beatty. One of them is unidentified, and one of them is just a guy named David that she won't talk about. But some people do think that Mick Jagger is part of that. And so let's listen and listen pretty closely if you can, because I think you can probably hear the Mick Jagger in the background.
He walked into the party like you were walking.
Actually, it's a later part. It's the later part of the song. We don't have it. It's the later part of the song where they do the chorus a few times at the end, building up to the end, where you can hear Mick Jagger because, like, you can kind of hear him in the background going, "Y'all so vain." That was you could hear it, and so that's another reason why people were speculating that he not only is he so vain that they wrote the song about him, but he's vain enough to actually appear on the song that's written about how vain he is. Because you can hear him if you listen closely, especially towards the end of the song when they build up and they repeat the chorus over and over. Yaw, so vain.
I think I got it right
here.
Oh,
okay.
I'm pretty sure this is exactly what we're talking about.
Well, close. But yeah, that's it's towards the end when it builds up, but you can hear him. You can hear Mick Jagger.
What a guy.
Ike from Country Club Hills says, are you familiar with the backstory of In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins? There's an urban legend that he witnessed a murder. That's not true. That's not true. There's a reason why it's called an urban legend, because it's an urban legend. It's not true. 262 area code said, Edie Brickell made an album with Steve Martin and then went on the road with him. Oh, okay. 815 area code says, good evening, Nick. This is Trucker Rich. Has anybody ever tried to explain what American Pie is about? The song, that is. It's about the death of... it's about America, but it's also about the death of Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper. The day the music died. The inspiration for the beginning of the song is about, you know, Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper and Richie Valens dying in the plane crash. That's why he wrote the song in the first place. But it's a big sprawling song that is also dumb. But the actual inspiration for Don McLean to write American Pie was the Buddy Holly, Big Bopper, Richie Valens plane crash. All right. Let's see here. We got some more stories here. Our House by Graham Nash of Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young. Our House. The Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song Our House was written by Graham Nash during the period in which he lived with Joni Mitchell and her cats in a Los Angeles home. The two had just returned home after a quiet morning at breakfast at Art's Deli and buying a nice vase at a local antique shop. And Nash was so struck by their moment of domesticity that he felt inspired to write an ode to the countercultural domestic bliss. So he was living with Joni Mitchell and everything was great on a Sunday morning, and then he wrote Our House. Do we have a little bit of that one?
Light the fire. Place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs.
Yeah, then they broke up.
So much for that vase.
Yeah, and he said vase. Well, I guess that's okay. All right. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We are talking about the backstories for famous songs and the people who inspired them. And we're getting some stories that I've not heard. I actually knew that one. I knew that was about Joni Mitchell. This one I didn't know. She's Always a Woman by Billy Joel, which is a beautiful song, by the way. Billy Joel released She's Always a Woman in 1977 as part of his fifth solo album, The Stranger. Let me just explain something to you. If you weren't around at that time, The Stranger was a massive album. Everybody had The Stranger. It was one of those albums that you legally had to have or you could be thrown in jail. It was right around the time when everybody had to have Fleetwood Mac Rumors. If you didn't have Fleetwood Mac Rumors, mm-hmm. the FBI busted into your house. You didn't have Fleetwood Mac Rumors, you go right off to the Hooskow.
Done.
And Frampton Comes Alive, that was another one that everybody had to have. And The Stranger was definitely one. Billy Joel, The Stranger was just a phenomenon, and it was a terrific record. In the years previous, Joel's then-wife, Elizabeth Weber, had taken over management of his career and quickly gained a reputation for being tough and a merciless negotiator. In the social climate of the time, this made some critics call her unfeminine, and as a result, it prompted Joel to write lines like, "Oh, she takes care of herself, and she can take care, and she can wait if she wants. She's ahead of her time, but she'll always be a woman to me." So that's what he wrote it about her, and because his then-wife... Was a tough cookie. So let's hear a little bit about this one.
She can kill with a smile. She can wound with her eyes. And she can ruin your faith with her casual lies. And she only reveals what she wants you to see. She hides like a child, but she's always a woman to me. She can lead you to love. She can take you or leave you.
I mean, what's funny about this song is that I don't know if it's a complimentary song at all, because he's basically listing all of these relatively bad habits and behaviors that she has, and then yeah, but she's always a woman to me.
Yeah. A little dismissive?
I don't know, but it was just like he lists everything that's wrong with her. I don't know. I love the song. I think it's beautiful, but I don't know, if I were Elizabeth Weber, I don't know if I would take that as a complimentary song. I'd be like, "Hey, dude.
Hey, Bill.
You're just doing a laundry list of what I do wrong. Can you write a little something more?" I don't know, but it's a great song. Great song. So Elizabeth Weber was the inspiration for "She's Always a Woman" by Billy Joel. Here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
How about the Eric Clapton song "Tears from Heaven"?
Yeah, that was about his son, who fell out of a window and to his death. A young son
in a high-rise building.
Yep. Yep. Said to a terribly sad story and a terribly sad song. So. Yeah, but that's an inspiration right there. So, all right, yeah, Paul, thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, that's about his. That was such a tragic story.
How old was it? What, four?
He was a kid. Yeah, and he was like 3, 4, 5 years old, something like that. I mean, like, man. Ridiculous. And he just, I mean, wow. And then, you know, like, and then Clapton wrote that song, and it became a massive hit.
Absolutely.
And of course, because of, and another reason why, you know, it's become such a beloved song is because of that backstory. I mean, you know, when you have a tragedy like that, which is nobody can even comprehend what it would feel like to have that happen. But to actually write a song about it, a beautiful song about it, and then, you know, it becomes a big hit. And then on top of that, the backstory is one of the reasons why people love the song so much. So, yeah, Eric Clapton. It's amazing how many songs have been written out of tragedies. You know, that's a whole, I mean, we're talking about, you know, stories where people inspired songs, and there are some backstories about it. But there are so many songs that were inspired by tragedy, and so many, so many of them are protest songs, you know. But, yeah, so. Okay, let's take a quick break, and I've got more stories about people who inspired some great songs and the backstories of songs as well. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. We'll get back to it after this. Welcome back, everybody. That's one of my favorite Prince songs. That's a deep cut, too. Nice, nice choice. That's Seven. That song is I love that song. I love Prince. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Tuesday. Yeah, man, do we do the Tom, you seen the movie Green Room?
Yeah, that's that's
Anton Yelkin.
Yeah,
Jeremy Saulnier. Patrick Stewart.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, so you've seen it.
Yeah, love it.
All right, so you know, well, the plot of the movie obviously is this punk band is sort of trapped in a green room at this club that's being run by racist Nazi skinheads, and it's really intense, really violent, really good, really really good. And there's a moment in the movie, I don't know if you remember it, Tom, where they at the beginning of the movie, they talk about they're being interviewed. This punk band is being interviewed for a magazine, and they ask who their influences are. And they're all like, they all say, you know, like punk bands and, you know, obvious answers that a punk band would say. Then late in the movie, when there's a chance that they're all going to die, and they've been hurt in some way, and some people have had their heads blown off with shotguns, and it's really scary and intense, and they may end up dead. They repeat, they start talking about their favorite bands again, and this time they tell the truth. And they talk, and they mention artists that punk band members would not usually mention, just because they know that, you know, they want to at least admit to themselves and tell the truth before they die. So Green Room was released the day after Prince died, which was Prince is one of my favorite artists of all time. And I was devastated when he died. Devastated. Crushed. And so it was playing at the Music Box. So I go to the Music Box to see the movie and, you know, enjoying the hell out of it. It's a packed crowd on a Friday night, and it's the day after Prince died. And I don't know if you remember, but Anton Yelchin, who was also dead by that point. Anton Yelchin was still alive when that movie came out.
Yeah, it was shortly after.
Yeah, it was
though,
shortly after very that. Quickly. Yeah, it was shortly after that. But anyway, so Anton Yelchin, they start saying the real bands, and he says Prince. Do you remember when he said that?
Yeah.
He admits that it's Prince, and it's not like, you know, the Descendants or whatever he mentioned in the first part of the movie. He said it's Prince. And on a dime, the entire audience began applauding in the theater because he had died the night before. And everybody was just like this weird sort of like release that everybody had that this guy says Prince, and we all went, oh, and everybody applauded, and it was just this round of applause. So I get out of the movie, and I found it so like moving that Prince had affected everybody in that room to the point where like a mere mention of his name 24 hours after his death caused an entire audience to feel something really deep and applaud and really want to express how much we loved Prince. Everybody in that room in the Music Box loved Prince, and just the mere mention of his name in the movie was lovely. So I get out of the theater, and as many people are wont to do, I posted on social media that I had just seen Green Room and it's great. You know, I wanted to let people know. And then I said, and then I described what happened, you know, in the movie theater and the whole thing about the mention of Prince and the applause and everything. And then about a half an hour later, 45 minutes later, I'm at home and I check my phone again and I'm going through social media and Facebook and stuff. And stories are being posted from around the country that it's happening at every screening of Green Room. Like, there were hundreds of stories reporting that people either cried or applauded at that moment when his name was mentioned. And to me, it was a profound, you know, it was like this guy, Prince, meant, look how much this guy meant to them.
And how many artists do you realistically get that can do that because everybody's got their favorite that if, like, you know, if they died, it's gonna hurt you. But, like, Prince... David Bowie
was another one that was awful. For me, George Michael was another.
Yeah, that was a
George Michael died on Christmas too, which was. But I thought that was a very unique thing that happened, and every time I watch Green Room, that moment means even more. And I just thought it was amazing because I mean it got picked up by the wire services. Like the story got picked up. Like, hey, here's what's happening when people are going to see Green Room. And it was picked up by the wires, and I just thought that was amazing. Anyway, that was
stuff.
Yeah, what's Prince? He's the man. He was the man. Hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, more behind the scenes stories here. If you would like to join us, we have some backstories for popular songs and who inspired these songs. And if you got any, you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. How about My Sharona by The Knack? Summer of 1979. Let me paint a picture for you, Tom. Summer of 1979. Every 12 minutes, My Sharona was played on every radio station on the dial. FM, AM, didn't matter. My Sharona, the summer of 1979, was everywhere. The Knack's lead vocalist, Doe Fager, wrote the song My Sharona as well as several other songs after meeting Sharona Alperin. He said it was like getting hit in the head with a baseball bat. I fell in love with her instantly, and when that happened, it sparked something, and I started writing a lot of songs feverishly in a very short amount of time. The song, which Fager claimed was written in 15 minutes, helped launch the band into international fame. And one of the most memorable riffs of all time.
Oh,
Is we got some My Sharona? It's such a great song. It is such a great song. I'm just sick that people associated it now with Reality Bites. Makes me sick.
Hey, turn it up.
Oh, my God. I hate that movie. That movie is supposed to be about my generation, by the way, Tom.
I think most people...
It came out, you know, it was like a The Gen X movie.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And, I hated it. I hated Ethan Hawke so much in that movie. And I love Ethan Hawke now.
Sure.
But there was a period of time where I was like, I can't even look at this guy. I want to punch him right in the mouth. I sided with Ben Stiller's character in that movie.
I think a lot of people do when they look back on it. They were trying to get you. Ben Stiller wanted you to kind of, because he wrote and directed it,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
He wanted you to think that, like, Ethan Hawke's character, what was it, Troy?
Yeah, I think it was Troy. But I hated him. I hated his character in that movie. I hated all the characters in that movie. I just hated that movie. And it was like, you know, when it came out, it was like being hailed as, well, not hailed, but advertised as this, like, this is the voice of Gen X, and I am Gen X. I'm on the cusp of Gen X and baby boomer, because I was born in 65, and I think that's the first year for
right.
Gen X. But I was in my 20s when that movie came out, so, you know.
Yeah, it was for you, in
so
a sense.
I so hated it. But now, and then, like, you know, I remember watching that scene in the gas station, and they start dancing around, and Sam was like, no, this is going to turn into a thing. They're going to take one of my favorite songs from the late 70s, and they're going to turn it into a thing that's associated with this stupid-ass movie. So, but anyway, My Sharona. And I'll tell you what, I backed that whole album. I think Get the Knack is a great record. I think think the whole album is good, not just My Sharona and Good Girls Don't. I think that whole album is really, really solid and really, really good. Did I listen to that album in the summer 1979? Summer 1979. For me, the three albums that I listened to over and over and over and over and over and over and over again ad nauseum was Get the Knack. Breakfast in America, Supertramp, Breakfast in America, and Cheap Trick Live at Budokan. Those were the.
Oh yeah,
that was it. That was it.
I used to get made fun of when I was in middle school listening to Supertramp.
Who would make fun of you for listening to Supertramp?
My peers.
I wouldn't. I think Supertramp
Unfortunately, I was a child.
Yeah.
You couldn't help me.
I think Supertramp is great.
They
I
are
love Supertramp.
Great. Goodbye Stranger is in my top 10.
That's, I mean, you know, and also, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier. I was talking with Patty about movies that make me cry. My favorite movie of all time is Magnolia, and there happens to be... a location in that movie, a bar, where William H. Macy hangs out, and there's apparently nothing but Supertramp on the jukebox in the bar, because every time they cut back to a scene, they're playing a Supertramp song. So, all right, let's take a break here. We got stories behind the songs and who inspired them.
Take a look at my girlfriend. She's the only one I got. Not much of a girlfriend. I've never seen the
So that was a coincidence?
100%.
That request came in before I started talking about Supertramp.
Way before.
That's so weird.
As Steve from the 309.
That's so weird.
Unbelievable.
That's from Breakfast in America, the album that I listened to 45 times a day in 1979. Supertramp for you. All right, it's 2 for Tuesday. Give me a 2 for Tuesday! Get your requests in now. That's one artist, two songs. Get them in. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Also, if you want to call in or text in, we're having some fun talking about the backstories of songs. who were the people that inspired some of the best songs ever? And we've been going through some stories, some of which we knew and some of which we didn't, and getting some background stories on some of these popular songs. 312-981-7200 for talking text. Okay, next is the backstory here for I Will Always Love You by Dolly Parton. And most of us know the song I Will Always Love You thanks to Whitney Houston's iconic 1992 version. But the song was actually originally written and performed by Dolly Parton back in 1973. Parton wrote the song as a farewell to her ex-partner and mentor, country singer Porter Wagoner, after she decided to leave him professionally in order to pursue a solo career. The song was her way of telling him that her choice wasn't driven by any sort of personal issue between them and that he will always have a place in her heart. So it was written for Porter Wagoner. Most people think it was written for Kevin Costner. God, The Bodyguard. That was a terrible movie. All right. But do we have the Dolly Parton version?
And I will always love you. I will always love you.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the definitive version.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is probably what paid for Dollywood.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, she's written so many great songs, man. Dolly Parton.
Sure. Speaking of it, I'm pretty sure the story goes that this and Jolene were written on the same day.
Come on! She wrote that and Jolene on the same day?
That's what I've been told.
Oh, my God.
That these songs were written on the same day.
Oh, my God. That's a good day.
Yeah.
That's like a real good day. Did you watch the Grammys just this past...
I did not. I missed them.
Well, Dolly was there, and they did a tribute to her.
Good.
It was fantastic. I thought it was the best part of the whole damn show.
out of curiosity, did they do Coat of Many Colors?
They did not.
Ah, darn. That's a family favorite.
Yeah.
Love the Coat of Many Colors.
Well, you know, Jolene is one of the best songs ever written.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's one of the greatest songs of all time. So, Vic, you a fan of Dolly Parton?
Absolutely.
You gotta be, man.
She was beautiful when she was younger, too,
still,
by the way.
Yeah, and she's just...
Oh, yeah, still. I mean...
She's just such a force, too, man. I mean, you know...
I didn't know that when Tom said that he had heard that those were both written in the same day.
Come on now.
But I believe that it's possible by Dolly Parton.
Well, sure. Know? She's just a national treasure, man. I adore Dolly Parton, and she's still awesome. And I've been to Dollywood.
So. Is it true they have a roller coaster?
Yes, it's true they have a roller coaster.
God bless.
It's awesome. Yeah. So, boy, and I'll tell you what. I'll tell you another thing, though. You know, I mean, look, Whitney Houston had an incredible voice. There's no question about it. Incredible voice. I was just annoyed because I loved Dolly Parton's version of that song, and I hated the movie, and... The Whitney Houston version was played on the radio every 12 seconds. It was on the radio. Like, you couldn't get away from it. And the video was on MTV. It was heavy, 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 heaviest rotation that you can rotate heaviness. So it was just, I got sick of it. But I will say this. Dolly Parton got a nice, I'm sure Dolly Parton still gets checks just from that version alone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she could have just stopped writing. You know, we were talking earlier. They were talking on Patty's show about a gig that one of her guests is doing with Jim Peterick, and they did that vehicle sort of parody song about driving kids around. And Jim Peterick version, you know, was in Ides of March, and Jim Peterick was in a lot of bands, including Survivor, and Jim Peterick wrote Eye of the Tiger. I don't know why he's still working. I mean, I know he's a great musician, he's a fun guy, and he likes to work, but you write Eye of the Tiger, and you can go, I'm done. You could just stay on your yacht for 50 years. I mean, you write a song like Eye of the Tiger, man, and you're set. You're done. It's like, you know, So anyway, all right. So this one is always, this one, I don't know why people, this next one, it kind of gives, this, the story, the backstory behind this one sometimes gives people the willies. And if it's true, it's Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond. And, you know, I don't know, here's the story, but I don't know if they got the whole backstory, but here it is. When he was asked about Caroline's identity in his 1969 song, Sweet Caroline's from 1969? Wow, okay. I thought it was later than that. I thought it was a 70s song, but... Neil Diamond insisted for decades that he had written the song about Caroline Kennedy, whom he had seen in the cover photo on Life magazine riding a horse. As a child, I want... That's why people, when they hear the story, go, what? He wrote it about Caroline Kennedy when she was a kid? Then, 45 years after he released the song, however, in 2014, Diamond revealed that he had actually written the song about his then-wife, Marcia, but that he needed a three-syllable name to fit the melody, so he came up with Caroline. Whichever version you believe, the song has proven to be enduringly popular and continues to sell well over 50 years after its initial release. All right, let's make our Red Sox fans happy.
Burden runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Warm, touching warm, reaching out, touching me.
Good, so good. Yeah. How did the Red Sox, how did that become a thing with the Boston Red Sox? How do we know the origin behind that?
I honestly have no idea.
I don't know. I mean,
Neil Diamond's not from Boston.
I don't think so. I don't know.
Huh.
Just, it's weird. I don't know. Maybe somebody knows the origin behind that, why that became a thing at Fenway. I'm not really sure. But if it, you know, but again, if it is about Caroline Kennedy, it's really creepy. And if it's not, why would he say that that's what, who he wrote it about?
Yeah.
I don't know because you're going to turn into, like, people are going to go, you're a creep. What? So I don't know. It's a song that I can give or take.
Sure, I wouldn't listen to it on a regular day.
No, but it's used very nicely in the movie Beautiful Girls, which is one of my favorite movies. Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder. If you listen to the original full 6 minute and 33 second version of Isn't She Lovely on Stevie Wonder's 1976 album Songs in the Key of Life, you might be surprised to hear that the song starts with a recording of a baby crying. Once you learn that Wonder dedicated the song to his daughter, Aisha Morris, and that recording is of Aisha's first breath, it starts to make more sense, as do the recordings of Wonder bathing his daughter later in the song. Okay, so I guess in the single version they don't have the baby crying at the beginning. I guess it's just in the album version. For the single version that was played on AM radio and top 40 radio, it was edited down because the 6 minutes and 33 seconds was very unusual at that time to be a single.
Yeah, because I've got it here at 3:19.
Yeah, there you go. So that's the single version. All right, well, let's hear a, this is a beautiful song, by the way. Man, oh man, there was a time, there was a stretch in the 70s when when Stevie Wonder was just unbelievable. There's just a long stretch in the 70s where he could do no wrong. Where he wrote some of the greatest songs of all time. Amazing. All right. Okay, let's break. And then we've got some more songs here. The backstories of songs. Who inspired some of these classic songs? And we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Watch Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mateer and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9.
But then they send me away, teach me how to be sensible, logical, oh, responsible, practical. And then they show me a world where I could be so dependable, oh, clinical.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. That, of course, was the logical song by Supertramp, and that was requested a long time ago, earlier this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to talk and text with us about the backstories of songs and who inspired certain songs. And the next one here in the article that we're going to talk about here is And I Love Her by the Beatles. Paul McCartney has stated that And I Love Her was the first ballad he impressed himself with. John Lennon called it McCartney's first Yesterday. While the composition of the song was mainly thanks to McCartney's imagination, he has said that he was inspired by English actress Jane Asher, who was his fiancée at the time. So this is a classic, And I Love Her by the Beatles. Here we go.
I give her all my love, that's all I do. And if you saw my love, you'd love her too. I love her. She gives me everything.
Yeah.
Tenderly.
Yeah. I don't know. I love that song. And I'm definitely, and I know most people are John guys. I'm a Paul guy when it comes to the Beatles. I'm an unapologetic Paul guy. 773 area code says, Nay, Nick, George Gershwin wrote Our Love Is Here to Stay as a tribute to his brother Ira. The Beatles wrote Dear Prudence in honor of Prudence Farrow, Mia Farrow's sister. Yes, that's true. Donna says Creed's With Arms Wide Open is about Scott Stapp's son, Jagger, who is now 20 years old. Scott has four children now, one daughter, three boys, and he's doing a solo album that's out in July. All right. Jay says, how about the song The Edmund Fitzgerald by Gordon Lightfoot? Well, that's an obvious one. That's the name of the song. Also, the song One Less Bell was an answer to Marilyn McCoo. The song Susan by the Cowsills was about in the name of Susan Cowsill. Led Zeppelin wrote the song, 262 area code says, Led Zeppelin wrote the song All My Love and is dedicated to Robert Plant's son who died in a tragic car accident. Okay. All right. So this next song, I don't even know where to begin with this next song. I can't stand this song. Lady in Red by Chris de Burgh. And let me explain something to you. I don't know, you know, it came out in 1986, I think. Yeah, 86. And I ended up going to a bunch of weddings, I think, that year, within that year. Every single wedding played this damn song. Especially if the bridesmaids' dresses were red. That was always like the big... They was like, oh, these are for this song. It's for the bridesmaids. Then all the bridesmaids and the groomsmen would come out, and they'd start dancing to Lady in Red. And I'd be at the bar.
I can picture it now.
Good Lord. Lady in Red was released as the second single from the British-Irish singer-songwriter Chris de Burgh's 1986 album, Into the Light. De Burgh has said that the inspiration for his song, which was the first single to gain him international recognition, was written in reference to his wife, Diane. In an interview with the British TV show This Is Your Life, DeBerg said that what inspired him to write the song was his first memory of Diane and the thought of how often many men can't remember what their wives were wearing when they first met. This is another one of those songs that we've been talking about that got played, like ridiculous amount of time. I mean, this is another one of those songs that was on every 5 seconds on the radio. And it wasn't pleasant to hear this over and over again. So here is a little bit of this Lady in Red. And next time, remember what your wife is wearing.
I think it's all right.
Oh, God.
That could be worse.
Yeah, not much. Oh, I hate that. I hate that song so much. And again, man, you know, that's a wedding. That was like an 80s wedding go-to. I mean, listen to that crap. That's exactly what you're going to hear if you go to a wedding in the late 80s. Oh, God, I hate that song. All right. Let's go with the next one is Killing Me Softly by Lori Lieberman. The origins of Lori Lieberman's song Killing Me Softly with his song are actually pretty contested. Here's what everyone agrees on. One night in 1970, Lori Lieberman was attending a Don McLean concert at Los Angeles's legendary Troubadour Club. As McLean sang Empty Chairs, Lieberman felt so moved by the performance that she hurriedly jotted down a short poem. I felt all flushed with fever, embarrassed by the crowd. I felt he had found my letters and read each one out loud. I prayed that he would finish, but he just kept right on. From that point forward, accounts diverge. Lieberman claims that she also came up with the phrase Killing Me Softly with his song, while the song's other two writers, Norman Gimbel and Charles Fox, claimed that Gimbel came up with that line. Regardless of who came up with it, the song has since become a classic, and rightfully so. All right. This is a great song. I mean, that's actually a pretty cool origin story, though. If that's true, she's at a Don McLean show, and Don McLean is singing a song and killing her softly with it. That's pretty cool. Let's hear a little of
it. I'm strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly. Song telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
Right. Now, of course, the Roberta Flack version is that's the classic version of it. That's you know, it's beautiful and everything, but
well, let's not forget about Ms. Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I was never a Fugees guy. I mean, I love Lauryn Hill. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is a phenomenal record, but I was never a Fugees guy. But the Roberta Flack version.
Oh, sure.
That's the definitive one. That's a beautiful song, too. I like that story. I hope it's true. I hope the origin story of that song is true. I really do. So, all right, let's take a quick break here. We got the news coming up and more stories behind the songs and who influenced them. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Get in here. We'll hear some more of these right here with the fun stories behind them.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words,
Chairman of the board, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Two for Tuesday. You mean two for Tuesday? One artist, two songs. Who requested that one?
That is Tom? Peter Indicator.
Peter Indicator, a little Frank Sinatra for two for Tuesday. How's it going, everybody? 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. We got some more music stuff that we're going to be talking about. We're going to continue talking about these songs that who inspired some of these songs and the backstories behind them. And we also are going to jump in What are your favorite movie scores of all time? Your favorite film scores of all time? We're going to go through some of the best and talk about some of the composers and some of the people responsible and some of the song, some of the music that that has come from movies. So your favorite scores of all time. And we'll get to that later on. But right now we're talking about the inspirations for some songs. And if you want to jump in, talk or text 312-981-7200. Okay, Suzanne by Leonard Cohen. Suzanne is one of Leonard Cohen's earliest and most well-loved and covered songs. It was released in 1967's debut album, Songs of Leonard Cohen. Cohen was inspired to write the song by his platonic friendship with Suzanne Verdal, who was, at the time, the girlfriend of Canadian sculptor Armand Villancourt. Despite what many people think, Cohen and Verdal never had a romantic relationship, but their little rituals when they would meet were an important part of Cohen's life at that time. So this is a lovely song by the great Leonard Cohen, Suzanne. It's interesting. I never knew the backstory behind this song. So why don't we hear a little bit of Suzanne?
Suzanne takes you down to her place near the river. You can hear the boats go by. And spend the night beside her, and you know that she's half crazy, but that's why you wanna be there. And she feeds you tea and oranges that come all the way from China, and just when you mean to tell her.
Yeah, I didn't know the origin to that. I thought for sure that was there was a romantic relationship for her, whoever the Suzanne was that he wrote that about, for sure. Yeah, that song's been covered a bunch of times, too, as they mentioned here in the article. How about the background here, the backstory of Crazy Love by Van Morrison? Van Morrison's Crazy Love, as well as his song Tupelo Honey, were both inspired by Janet Planet Rigsby, whom Morrison had married shortly before they were written. Morrison's song expresses a sentiment that many lovers may recognize, how this relationship with Janet made the bad times good and the good times better. Van Morrison and Janet Rigsby went on to have a daughter together, whom they named Shayna. But despite the song's romantic sentiments, they ultimately split up in 1973. So Janet Planet Rigsby is responsible for this classic by the great Van Morrison. Here we go.
Yet I run into her like a river song. She gave me love, 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 love. She gave me love, 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 love. She got a fine sense of humor when I'm feeling low down.
Janet Planet Rigsby, everybody. That's who that song is about. God, I love Van Morrison. Oh, my God. He's so amazing. So, yeah. You know, they had I believe it was Dave Hoekstra who hosted a trip to Ireland here.
Yeah, that was him.
And they went to Belfast.
They saw
Van Morrison in Belfast.
I'm legitimately jealous of that.
I mean, I don't even understand how anybody could survive that without their head exploding. I don't even. And like a small club too, like a 250 seat theater, like a club. My God.
Lucky
man. Oh man. I could listen to Astral Weeks 24 hours a day.
What was the group he was in before? Was it Them?
Them.
There's a song, it's like Baby Please Don't Go.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was in the movie.
Yeah.
It was in Wild at Heart.
Yep.
And I just love that, seeing Harry Dean Stanton flying.
God, Wild at Heart. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. That is such a great movie.
Oh, it's nuts.
I haven't seen it in such a long time. I remember Crispin Glover. I'm making my lunch. It's It's one of my favorite moments in the whole movie. I love that movie.
The snakeskin jacket represents my individual.
Yeah. Yeah, and God, Willem Dafoe. Oh, man.
Creepy.
Bobby Peru, everybody. You listen closer, you're going to hear a deep sound coming down from Bobby Peru. This room's got the smell of puke. You've been puking, little girl? I love that movie. God, everybody is so good in it, too. God, what happens to Harry Dean Stanton is so terrifying in that movie, too. And Diane Ladd, what a crazy performance from Diane Ladd.
Nominated, too.
Lipstick all over her face. Boy, that was a good movie. That was a good year for Lynch because Wild at Heart came out in the theaters that year. And Twin Peaks debuted on TV that year. So it was a good year for him. Yeah.
Hell, I even got my David Lynch shirt on.
I saw that. Yeah. I've got my Ash Williams shirt from the S Mart.
Shop Smart.
Yeah,
Shop
where it details all the things that you can get at the you can get the boomstick. If you want the boomstick, you can get it at the S Mart.
Need it.
Yep. All right, let's see. Okay, this next one, the explanation, I love the quote from this one. This is True Blue by Madonna. I for people who are regular listeners to the show, know that I love Madonna. I adore Madonna. Madonna's 1985 True Blue album's titular song was written as a, quote, unabashed Valentine to Sean Penn, whom she was dating at the time, and who she would marry by the end of the year in which she wrote it. Penn loved the expression true blue and would use it often, so Madonna, being deeply in love with him, obviously turned it into a hit pop song. Let's hear a little of this before the final quote.
You got a big old grin on your face.
This is not one of my favorite Madonna songs. You know, like her early. I mean, I like a lot of her early stuff. The early, you know, Burning Up and, you know, Holiday and all of those. Those are fun. Those are really cool. You know, like dance songs and stuff. And that's kind of a goofy song. I mean, I clearly, you know, it's not one of my favorite Madonna songs. But it for me, Madonna was like a really fun to watch, you know, poppy singer who was making fun dance music and did it very, very well. But her songs weren't significant or anything, and that's not really either, you know. But when Like a Prayer came out, that all changed. I remember listening to Like a Prayer and going, wait, whoa. She's writing songs that are about something, and she's writing like personal songs, and that's when it all changed for me. That's when I went, oh, okay, she's turned into like this real sort of significant artist, not just a really fun to listen to, you know, pop icon who makes great dance music, but like a Prayer is a great record, man,
spectacular,
and then she just went on to write more personal songs and do more really interesting records. And I love Madonna. I love her. But so she was totally in love with Sean Penn. He said True Blue a lot, so she wrote the song. And then years later, this is one of the reasons why I love Madonna. Madonna will say anything she wants to say, and that's one of the reasons I love her so much. She doesn't care because she's Madonna, and she shouldn't have to care because she's Madonna. Years later, in 2015, Madonna went on record saying that True Blue, quote, is a song about true love. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about when I wrote it.
Good for you.
Madonna,
good
man.
Good for you, Madonna.
She's the best. She's still awesome. I love her. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We got a few more behind-the-song stories here, and then we're going to talk about some of the best film scores of all time. But right now we got a break for some weather. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center for today, abundant sunshine helps temps rise to the upper to mid-40s, mid to upper 40s inland. The temps will dip around 30 in the evening and then hold about steady. Tomorrow, windy and milder. Late day highs reach the upper 50s. Area-wide, it'll be mild overnight. For Thursday, the mildest day of the week, despite considerable cloudiness and a chance of showers, temps will top 60 degrees in most areas. And then Friday, cloudy and rather raw. Rainfall may exceed 2 inches. Low-level east winds of 10 to 20 miles per hour will keep things chilly. Readings will hold in the 40s. It is currently 28 degrees at O'Hare. It's 27 at Midway. It's 33 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and wrap it up with these stories about these songs right here on 720 WGN. And again, if you want to join us, talk or text. If you know any of the backstories or have a question, it's 312-981-7200. Yeah, that's right. He did it my way. Peter requesting a little Frank Sinatra for our Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And, we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And coming up at 6 o'clock is Steve Cochran for your morning drive. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So there you go. All right. Well, we got some stories behind the songs. So I've often mentioned on this show that every once in a while I'll talk about how I think a song is perfect. Like it is an absolute perfect song. There's nothing wrong with it. And I have several nominees for perfect songs. This next story behind the song is just that. This is a perfect song, an absolutely perfect song. Photograph by Def Leppard. I said it many times on this show. It is such an amazing song, and it's a perfect song. Marilyn Monroe's beauty still doesn't fade, so it's no wonder Def Leppard's Joe Elliott was inspired to write a song about her. He was only 3 when Monroe died. But her image was so ingrained in his mind that, no matter what he did, he simply couldn't stop thinking about her. Finally, in 1983, Elliott recorded the heavy metal song Photograph with his band, making it a unique intergenerational love song that transcends space and time. In the video, there's Marilyn Monroe, the photograph is Marilyn Monroe in the video for it. I don't know if I would call this a heavy metal song. I mean, it's a rock song, but it's mostly, I mean, this to me is like pop. It's like, you know, it's like sort of like, I mean.
Falls under that band. Yeah, this is the time that death metal was coming up.
Yeah.
I don't know if this would be considered.
Oh, God, no. Def Leppard, no.
No.
But see, the two albums that Def Leppard released back to back, Pyromania and Hysteria, are awesome.
Sure. They're like the best of that.
Of that style, that time, there's no question about it. Totally. Nobody even came close at that time. Those two albums, and the producer John Mutt Lange did incredible stuff with the production of these. I mean, these are incredibly well produced records, and it took a long time between Pyromania and Hysteria. One, because they were perfectionists, and two, because Rick Allen had his car accident and lost his arm. And that was happening while they were writing / recording songs for Hysteria. And they didn't think they were ever going to finish the record. And then not only did they do that, but then they triumphed and they continued to tour and continued to, you know, to record long after that. But those two albums, man, Pyromania and Hysteria, those are quintessential, beautifully produced 80s records.
Iconic, really.
Oh, no question about it. And Photograph, I think, is the best song Def Leppard's ever done. But I guess, you know, I wasn't aware of the backstory, but I guess it's just like the video. Joe Elliott was enamored with Marilyn Monroe and then ended up writing this, which I think is a perfect song. Let's hear a little bit of this fantastic song. I absolutely love that song, and the chorus is so beautiful. I mean, it's just so beautifully layered and produced, and it's got such a great hook. I mean, the chorus and the bridge of that song are, I love that song. I really do. Yeah, so Def Leppard.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, I mean, you know. In Through the Night or On Through the Night was an album that was the first time I really heard Def Leppard, and they were harder on that record. They were edgier. They went a little more, you know, clean 80s pop kind of influence when they got John Mutt Lange as their producer. But yeah, that's a great song. All about Marilyn Monroe. All right. Here's Deborah on WGN. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, how are you?
I'm good. What's up?
Well, I wondered if you knew the backstory of Moonraker that Dame Shirley Bassey sings.
From the James Bond movie?
Yes.
I just know it's a James Bond song.
Oh, okay. Well, originally it was written for Johnny Mathis, and Johnny Mathis became ill, and they asked Dame Shirley if she would sing it, and she didn't particularly like the song, but through the years, as she has listened to it, she has now incorporated it into her concert schedule. Of course, she's not doing concerts any longer, but she will do charitable shows, and she will sing a portion of Moonraker.
Wow. Well, I mean, you know, it's an obvious choice to go to Shirley Bassey because she's so iconically connected to the James Bond series in the first place. I mean,
oh, absolutely, yes, and for me, she is the best singer and performer who has set foot on stage. Have you ever seen her?
I've never seen her in person. No.
Oh my goodness! Well, go on YouTube and call up "Excuse Me."
Right, I've seen her perform that. I know that song. I do.
Oh, all right.
Okay. She's an amazing singer, Shirley Bassey. Amazing, yeah. So, Moonraker. She didn't like it at first because it was for Johnny Mathis, and now she likes it. It's a good story, Deborah. Thank you for the background. Okay, this next one, this will be the last one we're going to do here. This is In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel, which has become, you know, it's a beautiful song. It's an absolutely gorgeous and beautiful song. And, I mean, it's become iconic because of Say Anything.
I did that for my prom date.
You did that for your prom date?
Yes.
You stood outside?
Prom. Yeah.
Did you wear a trench coat and a class t-shirt?
No, I did a, I didn't have a trench coat. I had a blazer sport coat.
Uh-huh.
And I had it was a band t-shirt for a local band. Day Old Donuts, Chris uh-huh. Lake, shout out. And I had like a Bose speaker, and I perched my iPod into it.
Did she know that you were out? Did she know that you were going to do that? Or
she didn't know. I told her mom because I was just like, well, make sure she's like close to the window so she can
and
hear.
And you played
it.
That song.
I played In Your Eyes.
Okay,
yeah, it totally worked.
Oh well, it's a beautiful song. Yeah. It's about Rosanna Arquette. For those people who might access Rosanna Arquette. And I mean, you know, and then Steve Porcaro wrote Rosanna, the Toto song about her. So she's had two songs written about her. So she must be something. That's all I'm saying. And I think she is. I think she's awesome. So In Your Eyes is such a gorgeous song. And let's listen to it a little bit of this.
In your eyes, the light, the heat. The door in your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you feel if somebody writes a song like that about you? You know what I mean? Like, my God. I mean, it's such a beautiful song. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You wrote that about me? Holy cow.
And there's people out there that would say that Phil Collins was the better part of Genesis.
Oh, please.
Get out of here.
Please. But, yeah. So they dated for a while. Roseanne Arquette, they lived together and ended up breaking up in 1992. But, yeah, and I love Roseanne Arquette. I think she's fantastic. I love all the Arquettes, quite frankly. All of them. So, anyway, so those are some of the backstories behind some of your favorite songs. We're going to take a break. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, let's talk about your favorite movie scores of all time. What movies had the best music scores? 312-981-7200. We'll jump into that after we break for the news.
The numbers are...
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 a.m. I'm every weekday morning, 1 to 5 a.m., I'm your overnight dude. So there you go. It's Tuesday morning. That means two for Tuesday. Yeah, two for Tuesday. It's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Tom, who requested that one?
That was a listener in the 708. That was for Steven Tyler's birthday.
Steven Tyler's birthday was about 86.
105? Who knows? He's ageless.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to really love Aerosmith. You know, I have there are like some categories, Tom, that I don't know if you probably haven't heard me talk about this before, but in my opinion, that we have some categories like used to be good, but they suck now. That and Aerosmith falls under that category.
That's unfortunate too.
Used to be good, but they suck now. And then there's a second category.
Okay,
which is they've been bad for longer than they were good. And that's also true of Aerosmith. It's also true of Billy Joel.
Wow,
he's been worse longer than he was good, but he used to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's also true of Elton John, who
yeah.
used to be great and now has been bad for much longer than he was good. And Aerosmith falls into that category too.
Uh huh.
So
it's harsh.
Well, it's true.
It's the pit of despair.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of artists like that, and Aerosmith is one of them. But there's no denying, like, the first, like, five Aerosmith albums are phenomenal.
Oh, sure.
Aerosmith Rocks is one of the greatest rock albums ever recorded.
You weren't a big fan of Jaded, that song?
Actually, I like that song. Actually, I like Jaded. I actually do.
Yeah.
It's the damn Armageddon, I don't want to miss a thing.
That's
thing.
A turning point.
Well, it was before that. I mean, yeah. I think they started to suck before that, but that was like the crowning achievement of suckiness for Aerosmith was that song. It's like, if you want the trophy for suckiness, present it to Aerosmith for that damn song from Armageddon. But there was a time in that, you know, Walk This Way, great song from a great album.
Totally rips.
Toys in the
it's
Attic,
awesome.
Great album. So, okay. Hey, speaking of music, which we have been most of the morning, what are your favorite movie scores? Your favorite composed scores for the movies? 312-981-7200. You know, it's funny because one of my favorite scores of all time, like in my top five easy, is by Peter Gabriel. As we mentioned Peter Gabriel before the break, he did the, which I think is an extraordinary soundtrack. He composed the music for Martin Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ. And it's one of the greatest scores of, it's one of my very favorite scores of all time. Like truly a magnificent score. And I used to listen to that CD all the time. But that's like definitely up really, really high on my list of favorite movie scores. It's a great, great, great music score. One of my very favorites is one of my favorite composers working today is Carter Burwell. Carter Burwell has done a ton of music. He did. He was nominated last year for three billboards. For three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, he was nominated for that. And the score for three billboards is fantastic, as is all of Burwell's scores. But my favorite of Carter Burwell's scores, and like I said, he you know, he's done the music for almost all of the Coen Brothers movies. But my favorite is Barton Fink. I love the score for Barton Fink. It's really cool and weird and moody, like the movie. And kind of doesn't fall under a category like the movie. And that, by the way, what do you have? That's my favorite Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah,
Barton Fink. What's your favorite?
Favorite Coen Brothers. I would be hard pressed to pick. I guess it's going to be either No Country for Old Men,
which is my least favorite.
Really?
Yeah. No, it's not my least favorite. My least favorite is the
Lady Killers.
No.
Not even Lady Killers?
No, and I don't like Lady Killers. Lady Killers is a bad movie. The one that had the soundtrack that everybody loved, George Clooney with the idiots singing.
Oh,
Brother, Where Art Thou?
You don't like
That movie.
Jeez.
With
the
every
Soggy Bottom
fiber,
Boys?
With every fiber of my being, I hate that movie. I remember when I saw it, I was in the theater and I went to the Landmark Century and saw it, and it was me and like 20 other people, and I mean I hated it. And when it was over, there was a guy sitting, he was alone as well. And there was a guy sitting about two seats away from me, and I kind of looked over at him and he kind of looked over at me, and we both had like this really like befuddled look on our face. And I finally said to the guy, I'm like, listen, was it me or did that really suck? And he goes, no, it really sucked. and I hate that movie. The soundtrack's great.
Sure.
The music.
T-Bone Burnett.
Music is great. Yeah. There's no question about it. The music is great.
You just don't like the movie.
Hated that movie. Hated it. I hated it more than Lady Killers.
Really?
Yeah. No Country for Old Men. I didn't like No Country for Old Men at all.
That's unfortunate.
I actually thought Josh Brolin was good in it, but it didn't do anything for me. I mean, it did nothing for me at all. So, I mean, I like the score. Carter Burwell did the score, but
I like great score, great Coen Brothers movie, Blood Simple.
Blood Simple is great.
Amazing. What a debut.
One of the greatest directorial debuts of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Without question. One of the best directorial debuts of all time.
And the score and the music itself, the use of, what was it, Same Old Song by the Four Tops?
Yeah.
With that tracking shot across the bar.
The bar
goes over the drunk guy?
Over the drunk guy, yeah. it's one of my favorite shots in the movie. But no, Barton Fink to me is just, you know, Barton Fink is, you know, is my favorite. And you know which one is way up on my list of Coen Brothers movies? That is, I think, drastically underrated.
Is it Hudsucker?
No, I love Hudsucker. I agree. That also is underrated. A Serious Man. I think A Serious Man is
Under the Radar.
A great movie.
Yes.
And it feels, you know why? Because it seems to me, in terms of style and mood, it's a companion piece to Barton Fink. It feels it's got that weird sort of thing. Barton Fink's a very weird movie. I mean, very, very weird. And try to explain that movie to people is a difficult task. But anyway, so we got off on a tangent on Coen Brothers movies. But Carter Burwell does the scores for most of the Coen Brothers movies, and Barton Fink is way up there on my list. Let's see. Let's get to the phones. Here's Michael on WGN. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right.
First of all, great show tonight. Really have enjoyed listening to the stories behind all those songs.
Thanks.
Great, great topic tonight.
Thank you. Thank you.
My favorite score, I was telling your producer, is the original Batman from 1989, the score by Danny Elfman.
It's a great score.
Just a fantastic score.
Yep.
I watched that movie as an adult, and it's so amazing to me how the music is just absolutely perfect for that film and the way that it was shot.
It was
absolutely incredible.
No, it's one of the best. It's one of my favorite scores too. Danny Elfman is another guy who has done some amazing scores over the years.
Another one of my favorites, believe it or not, is Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Of course.
He did the score for that movie as well.
That's
a great score.
It's a tremendous score. It's beautiful. And that's not hard to believe. First of all, it's a great movie. Pee-wee's Big Adventure is such a classic. But yeah, Danny Elfman consistently. You can always count on him for some really good music. So, all right, Michael, thanks.
Most Yeah, you're very welcome.
Okay, take care.
Have a great night.
Hey, here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Nick and Tom. How are you guys?
Good.
I'm calling from California, enjoying the show a lot.
Thanks.
My favorite musical score of all time, and actually my favorite composer probably of all time, is James Horner.
Yeah.
And my favorite score is Braveheart.
Braveheart is great. You know, James Horner, I mean, you can... God, he's written some amazing... We just played a little bit of Alien earlier. He's James Horner's the real deal. He's the real deal. There's no question about it.
By the way, not to get you two guys upset, but his first score was Lady in Red.
Oh, you mean the Gene Wilder movie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, jeez.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
Yeah, the song we played earlier, not from the Gene Wilder movie. Separate thing. There's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. From an old sailor, how about Victory at Sea?
Victory at Sea, yeah, sure.
It's a big album, and I'm amazed at all the names and the stuff that you can remember all the time. I can't remember my... days at school for Cripe Peak.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. It'll all go real soon, though, Jim. All right, thank you. Thanks, Jim. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Nick. My favorite score of all time is the score from the movie Forrest Gump.
Beautiful.
And, I mean, every time you hear it, it just, I don't know, it just makes you smile. You think about it, it's that feather floating around, and it's just... couldn't match a theme song better to a movie if you tried. You know?
It's the great Alan Silvestri. Alan Silvestri did the score for that. He's worked on Zemeckis' movies since he's exclusively done the score for Zemeckis' movies since Romancing the Stone. So we're going back to like 1984. So he's been working with this guy, and his score for the last Zemeckis movie, Welcome to Marwen, is beautiful. I think it's the best score. I think it's Silvestri's best score since Gump. And, I mean, you can't, you know, if you're going to mention Alan Silvestri, you can't not mention Back to the Future, which is one of the greatest scores of all time. When I talked to Zemeckis, I said that I thought that that Silvestri's score for Marwen is the best since Gump, and Zemeckis agreed. He said, I think so, too. And, boy, the fate of that movie, what a damn shame that nobody went to go see Welcome to Marwen. It's coming out on DVD now, though. I think it's available on streaming, or you can get it on demand, or digitally. But I think it's coming out on DVD like next week or something like that. And if you missed it, you should see it. It's because it's a great movie. I mean, it was a sin that nobody saw that movie. So, all right, we'll take a quick break. Everybody, hang on. 312-981-7200. What are your favorite movie scores of all time? We'll get back to it after we break here for some weather. Today, abundant sunshine helps temps rise to the mid to upper 40s inland. The temps will drop to around 30 in the evening and then hold steady. For tomorrow, windy and milder. Late day highs will reach the mid to upper 50s area wide, and it'll be mild overnight. For Thursday, the mildest day of the week, despite considerable cloudiness and a chance of showers. Temperatures will top 60 degrees in most areas. Friday, cloudy and raw. Rainfall may exceed 2 inches. Low-level east winds, 10 to 20 miles per hour, will keep temps chilly. Readings will hold in the 40s. Currently, it's 28 degrees at O'Hare, 27 at Midway, 33 at the lakefront. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, more of your favorite movie scores of all time. We got some texts coming in. We got some phone lines open. It's 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back, everybody. We are live in the... Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 a.m. And, let's see. Steve Grzanich is coming up with the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. So there you go. Okay. Hey, we're talking about your favorite movie scores. 312-981-7200. What are your favorite movie scores? We got some texts in here. 301 area code says John Williams, Jaws, Star Wars, E.T., Close Encounters, Raiders of the Lost Ark, all great scores. Yes, John Williams has so many classic scores, it's hard to even name them all. I mean, he's obviously one of the modern classic composers and one of the greatest movie music composers of all time. I mean, so many iconic scores by John Williams. 906 area code says best film score is Beverly Hills Cop with Eddie Murphy. I don't even remember the score.
Well, it had a.
I remember Axel F.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's the only thing I remember.
That's fun.
Wild Bill says that Bernard Herrmann wrote great scores for Alfred Hitchcock movies. Speaking of the film club, he says, oh, thank you, Wild Bill. I will speak of the film club. I host a film club every month, and it's usually on the first Tuesday of the month, but the first Tuesday of this month happens to be an election night, so we're not going to do it then. We're going to do it the second Tuesday of the month. It's 2 weeks from tonight, and it's April 9th, and I will be hosting it, as usual, at AMC Rosemont 18, which is formerly the Movie Co. Theater. And at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, April 9th, I will be showing on the big screen Alfred Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much with Jimmy Stewart and Doris Day, which, of course, is a terrific movie. And it's our second Jimmy Stewart movie in a row, because last month we showed Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and we had a really great crowd, and everybody, it was so great to see that on the big screen. And you very, very rarely get to see The Man Who Knew Too Much on the big screen, so you should come out. It's only $10. Parking is free. Reserve your seats right now. They'll be waiting for you next two weeks from tonight. The seats will be waiting for you. So go to amctheaters.com right now, amctheaters.com. Pick out the seats you want at the seating chart, and they'll be waiting for you. And you can see Jimmy Stewart in the classic Alfred Hitchcock thriller, Man Who Knew Too Much. Again, party. It's $10 to get in. Parking is free. So see a classic Alfred Hitchcock movie with a great Jimmy Stewart performance on the big screen. Is a very rare thing, so you need to come out and see it. And also, we've got a deal with the right up the street is the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. We've got a wonderful deal with these guys. If you go in for dinner before the movie, say you go in around 6:30, 7 o'clock or something like that, all the food is 15% off. If you say, hey, I'm with the film club, show them a receipt or your ticket stub or proof that you're going to see The Man Who Knew Too Much. And again, all of your food, 15% off. And the food is great at the Caddyshack restaurant. The atmosphere is fantastic. The wait staff, the management, everything about the place is great. And we've loved having this partnership with them and them providing my film club members with 15% off all their food. So make a night of it. Go to Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, you know, before the movie, get some food, get that 15% discount, and then just jump right over. It's only a couple of seconds away. Jump right over to the movie theater at AMC Rosemont 18, and you can see The Man Who Knew Too Much, Jimmy Stewart's Man Who Knew Too Much on the big screen. So there you go. Get your seats reserved now at amctheaters.com. Let's see. Let's go to Diane on WGN. Hi, Diane.
Yeah, hi, Nick.
Hi.
Really enjoying your show tonight.
Thank you.
I've got a movie. I don't know who did the score, but I'm obsessed with this movie and the music. It's the Spike Lee movie, The 25th Hour.
Yeah, that's my favorite Spike Lee movie of all time.
Oh, my God. I am obsessed with that movie. I love it.
It's an amazing movie. Terrence Blanchard did the score. Terrence Blanchard. And who's done the score for many of his movies, including Black Klansman. He got nominated for an Academy Award for that, for Black Klansman.
I haven't seen it.
25th Hour is my favorite Spike Lee movie of all time. It's an astonishing movie.
It is. Yeah. Everybody in that movie is great.
Yep. And the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it. And Barry Pepper needs to work more. There's not enough.
Yes.
He needs to be in more movies. Edward Norton and Rosario Dawson.
Anna Paquin. That scene of her in the nightclub.
Yep.
Oh my God!
It's such a beautiful movie. It really is. And it was one of the first movies to really deal with the scars that were left in New York after 9/11.
Oh, yeah. So poignant.
Yeah, that's exactly what
the... Oh, my God,
that's
with the plaque and the firemen.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
This is a great movie. Diane, thanks for the call.
One more thing on the movie.
Yeah.
The outplay on the credits going out, that great Bruce Springsteen song.
Right, yep, absolutely. Okay, Diane, take care.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bye.
God, there's somebody else out there that likes 25th Hour as much as me. I didn't think there was. All right. We have to break. We got the news coming up, and then we'll go back to the phones and the texts and talk about your favorite movie scores and more right here on 720 WGN. Right, welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. You hear me? Two for Tuesday continues. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Our final two for the morning. Obviously, it's Pink Floyd. Who requested that?
That's Jim from the 312.
Jim from 312 requesting some Floyd on this Tuesday morning. And speaking of music, that's what we're talking about right now. We're talking about some of your favorite, the greatest film scores of all time. We got a bunch of texts in. Favorite movie scores, Rocky II and Godfather I, A Pitcher's Duel. Well, I wonder why you would pick Rocky II over the first Rocky. Andrea says, something tells me you won't agree with me, Nick, but I love the music in Wes Anderson's movies. Why would you think I wouldn't agree with that? I love Wes Anderson. Specifically Grand Budapest Hotel and also Moonrise Kingdom. Alexandre Desplat was the composer, I believe. You're right. He used to work with Mark Mothersbaugh, too, from
Devo. Right?
Yeah. The score from the movie Witness by Maurice Jarre used to creep me out. Am I blanking now on the Christopher Nolan movies? That's not Maurice Jarre, is it? Who did the score for Inception?
Oh, that was Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer, right? Okay, Hans Zimmer. Yeah. That guy does amazing scores.
I'm a little afraid that he's fallen into a very common pattern though with his last few. They're great,
yeah,
but it's a lot of the blah, yeah, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like ever since The Dark Knight, kind of,
yeah.
But he's still great. I still love him.
I think the score for Inception is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think everything about Inception is fantastic. 773 says Dances with Wolves by John Barry. I need to mention Suspiria, the original Suspiria. Well, in the new Suspiria, Tom York's score in the new Suspiria is great. But Goblin's score for Suspiria is without question the best score to a horror movie of all time. And I think one of the greatest scores of all time. And if you ever get a chance, because they tour around, and if you ever get, they were just here at Reggie's in November. They did two performances at Reggie's in November where they live scored the movie. So they showed the movie and the band played the score live with the movie. And it was unbelievable. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. I saw it a few years ago at the Metro where they showed the movie and the band live scored it. It was unbelievable. I mean, really, really unbelievable. All right. A few calls here. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello. The first time I ever went out, I was 10 years old, and purchased the soundtrack album was for the original Planet of the Apes by Jerry Goldsmith.
That's an amazing score. Jerry Goldsmith is another one. That's another composer who did some really, 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 really great movies and did some really great scores. But yeah, the original Planet of the Apes is a fantastic score. So, all right, John, thanks for the call. Take care. Here's Carl on WGN. Hi, Carl.
How you doing, Nick?
All right, what's up?
Older movie, A Summer Place.
Oh, sure, that theme.
And that, I think, was Max Steiner.
Yeah, that theme is classic.
Yeah. And I'll never get tired of Goldfinger.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great one.
Fabulous music.
Exactly. All right, but thank you, Carl.
Great show. You might run this into a couple of days. There's so much to talk about.
I know. We'll see.
Take care.
All right, take care. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So, yeah, for mine was Ennio Morricone, specifically The Untouchables.
Oh, that's a great score, too. Well, Ennio Morricone is another one, man. I mean, you could go on and on with the classic stuff that he composed. But yeah, no, his score for The Untouchables is fantastic.
You know, he's known for the spaghetti westerns more than anything. But I love the '80s stuff, The Untouchables and Once Upon a Time in America, especially.
Yeah, no, great stuff, great stuff. His score for The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, is incredible. His score for Hateful Eight is great. I mean, he's the man.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Right up there. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks.
Okay. Donald is on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi. Yeah, I was thinking of the great classic composer Miklos Roza.
Oh, sure.
Who wrote Ben-Hur, maybe his best score.
Yeah, Ben-Hur is a, you know, I mean, there's another person who in the classic cinema world scored some amazing stuff.
Yeah, he'd even write for the intermission. Remember, the movies would be so long,
right,
they'd have an intermission period. So
right,
it was like a score and a half.
Yeah, that's right. True. All right, Donald, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's Brian on WGN. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Brother Nick. One of the it's not really a movie, but it's NFL game films. That music, and it just goes so well with all the shots of all the classic NFL games. And but what really also made it great was the narrator, John Facenda.
Yeah.
The cadence of his voice and how he would say some of the most funny things. It's like all three went together so well, you couldn't imagine anything else. And I mean, there was one where he was talking about Butkus, and it was like some of the funniest things. But it's like that music so fast. It goes so well with all the football shots they're showing.
Right. Okay. All right. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Hey, Nick, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, The Godfather, Magnificent Seven. That was Sue who said that. The Natural and The Sting. Midnight Cowboy is a good soundtrack. And 630 Area Code says To Live and Die in L.A. I love that soundtrack. I love that.
I love that whole movie. I feel like no one ever talks about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it did kind of fall off. It did kind of fall off the radar.
Which is weird because it's Billy.
It's William Friedkin.
Yeah, Billy Friedkin.
Vic and I talk about To Live and Die in L.A. We just talked about it not too long ago, last week.
Oh, good.
Because, you know, both of us said the first time we saw that movie, when they blow William Peterson's face off with the shotgun, I was like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And there's still a half an hour of the movie left.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
I've interviewed Friedkin a few times, and we've talked about that movie and all of it. And I think Wang Chung's score is great. I think it's great, and it fits in with the style of the movie. And the movie was made in the mid '80s, and mm-hmm. that, you know, the way people are dressed, the way people are acting, and all that stuff.
Apparently, they told Wang Chung, like, Friedkin wanted them to do it, but he said, just don't let the song be, or one of the songs be, like, named after the movie or be a title track like that. And then what's the first thing they do?
Yeah.
To Live and Die in L.A.
Yeah. Yeah. that's pretty funny. But it's a great song. So, Hans Zimmer, another Hans Zimmer, Christopher Nolan, Interstellar. Interstellar is a fantastic score. The Lord of the Rings movies have great music, really, really, really great music. And let's see. Anyway, you can't talk about movie scores without talking about John Carpenter. You know, we mentioned The Thing, but that was Ennio Morricone. But I mean, Carpenter. You know, what can you say about the Halloween score, the score for Halloween, the score for Assault on Precinct 13? I can go on and on about Carpenter's scores. The Fog, Prince of Darkness. I mean, Carpenter's my favorite director of all time. And so I love his movies and I also love his scores. But you can't talk about classic movie scores and not mention at least three or four Carpenter scores, because that's how good he is. All right, what about Blade Runner?
Vangelis, yeah. Or Vangelis, however you want
Vangelis.
To say.
Vangelis. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an incredible score.
That's the sound of the future.
Yeah.
That's what the future sounded like in 1982.
Yeah. I remember, you know, that, but you want to talk about a movie that tanked when it came out.
Oof.
Blade Runner tanked. That's another topic that we might jump into at some point this week.
Oh, I think we should.
Because movies that originally that you would be shocked to find out tanked.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner's gone on to become a classic.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think of the sequel?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Although probably I went back. I watched 2049 and then went back and watched Blade Runner, and I was like, okay, so the original Blade Runner is definitely better in my I thought, but Blade Runner 2049 was like, this is about as close as it's going to get to a proper follow-up.
I agree with it 100%. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
Blade Runner. I personally think Blade Runner is the greatest science fiction movie ever made,
if not the most influential.
Yeah, and I'm talking about every cut, because there's 27 different versions of the movie. The original version of the movie with the voiceover that Harrison Ford hated doing, so he did a terrible job on purpose. Is the one that I grew up with, because I was a teenager when the movie came out.
Oh, wow.
And so that's the one I had on VHS. That's the one I saw in the theaters. That's the one I watched on cable over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then when Ridley Scott released the next cut, where they took the voiceover out of it, I loved that, and they added the unicorn, the cutaway to the unicorn. And then the next director's cut, and then there was an unrated cut as well, which had more violence in it. It actually showed when Rutger Hauer sticks his thumbs
into Tyrell's
eyes. You get to see it go all the way in, blood shooting out, all that stuff. So there's extra violence and extra stuff. There's even that version. And then there's the version where they went in and digitally put Joanna Cassidy's face on the bad stunt double when she's running through the series of glass.
Yeah.
And that's added, and they added one other, the extra scene.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for me, the last version that came out is the ultimate version. And, the ending of the original voiceover version, those are outtakes from The Shining.
The
overhead shots.
That makes sense.
They're outtakes of The Shining.
Yeah.
Because it was like, who knows? She may live, but who knows? You know, that whole thing at the end. But the beauty of that, the last version of it, is the ambiguity of it.
Oh, yeah.
They kept that ambiguity in 2049.
They did.
Because they never, ever tell you if Deckard's an alien or not. A replicant or not. They never say it.
Yeah.
Personally, I think he's a replicant.
Yeah.
I think Deckard's absolutely a replicant.
I think Ridley Scott's gone on the record and said yes. But honestly, I like to just live in that middle world.
That's what I'm saying. That's one of the reasons. One of the reasons why 2049 was so great. It didn't answer any of those questions.
No.
Did not answer any of those questions.
It wasn't interested in that part.
Right. And I don't care that it was 9 hours long. I could have sat in the theater another 4 hours with 2049.
I'm still holding out hope that Denis Villeneuve has that 4 hour cut that supposedly exists.
Yeah.
I'd watch it.
The dude's making Dune now. It's probably going to be 20 hours long. So.
God, yeah, finally.
Hey, listen, I like the David Lynch version.
You're preaching to the choir.
All right, we got a break here, but we got a break, and we got the weather. But when we come back, I have to talk with Mary Vandebelt about something very important. And so when we get back after the break, I'll do the weather. We'll have a break, and then I need to talk with Mary Vandebelt about something very, very important. So we'll do that after we break here. Here's your weather for today: abundant sunshine will help temperatures rise to the mid 40s, and they will dip to around 30 in the evening and then hold steady. For tomorrow, windy and milder, late day highs in the upper to mid 50s and a mild overnight. For Thursday, the mildest day of the week, despite considerable cloudiness and a chance of showers, temperatures will top 60 degrees in most areas. And for Friday, cloudy, rather raw. Rainfall may exceed 2 inches. We got east winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. It'll keep things chilly. Readings will hold in the 40s. Currently 28 degrees at O'Hare, 27 at Midway, 33. At the lakefront. All right, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Wow. I'm doing a deep cut.
Shout out to Jim.
Jim. Digging into the album Metal. That's One of These Days by Floyd. I spent a significant amount of time in my youth listening to Pink Floyd constantly. Welcome back, everybody. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Okay.
I need to talk to Mary Vandeveld, who just got here. She will be doing traffic for you this morning and keeping an eye on things. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to mention something that was a news story that I thought might interest you.
Oh, What's going on?
There's a John Bon Jovi cruise that will set sail with the rock star on board.
What?
Next month, and the trip is selling pretty fast, so you might want to get your tickets now.
Next month?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Just take your vacation days now.
it might be too late.
Let me read this to you. John Bon Jovi fans, here's not one but two opportunities that you do not want to miss. The rock star is offering 2,200 of his fans the chance to sail with Norwegian to the Bahamas and the Mediterranean this year.
Ooh.
The first trip will depart from Miami and head to Nassau on Norwegian Jade April 12th through the 16th. Oh, the next one, the other one is in August.
Really?
Yeah.
What, is the whole band going or just John?
I'm not sure. You don't care about the rest of the band,
well,
do you?
No, I really don't.
Is Tico Torres really somebody that you care about?
Well, I do care. You know, it's the Norwegian line, and that's the one that just had all the problems.
Oh, yeah.
With the high winds and the rough waters off of Norway,
true.
You know?
That's true.
So I don't know. Does John know? Oh, boy, I wonder. I hope
he's going to captain the ship. It'll all be fine.
Oh, my gosh. This is fantastic.
The second will depart from Barcelona and head to Palma. And that's also on Norwegian Pearl, and it's August 26th through the 30th. And if he haven't even told you the best part, John Bon Jovi will be on the cruise with you, performing on stage in a live rock concert on the pool deck,
ooh,
along with the 11-piece Kings of Suburbia band. So it looks like it's
oh, he's bringing the B-League.
Who the hell is Kings of Suburbia?
I don't know.
Are we supposed to know who that is? Is that a selling point, Mary?
Did you say Siberia? What?
Suburbia.
Oh, Suburbia.
The 11-piece Kings of Suburbia band. There will also be question and answer sessions, so you can ask the legend any questions. There are speaking panels, karaoke, and so much more.
Can we have dinner with him?
I don't know.
I wonder how much it costs. It'd be interesting to find out.
Yeah. I don't think it says here. Additionally, guests can explore a pop-up shop of Bon Jovi's clothing line. Did you know he had a clothing line?
No, I did not. I can't imagine any men on this cruise. I mean, seriously, if I asked my husband, do you want to go on this cruise? No,
there's going to be a lot of ladies on this cruise.
Oh, yeah.
And his clothing line is called Heart and Dagger, H-A-R-T, and Dagger.
Okay.
And you can dine at the JBJ Soul Kitchen, which is a restaurant that gives back to those in need. He's got a JBJ, because, nice. You know, when I think of Soul Kitchen, I think of John Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
He's always giving, though. You know that.
Everyone on board will receive an autograph event lithograph, plus fans who book as the first 500 staterooms on each cruise will get the opportunity to take a picture with John Bon Jovi himself.
Where's his room going to be? That's what I want to know.
That's very... They're going to have
on the poop deck.
Hello, wait a minute. On the poop deck. Hold on. Oh. Considering what his music sounds like, yes.
Hey.
So, you know, Mary, if Mary goes, they're going to have to hire. I think they're going to have to hire extra security. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, I bet his wife will be there.
Oh, man! How dare she?
Well, maybe not. They've been married a long time, but, so maybe they want to leave her home.
I got to get away from her.
Yeah.
Both cruises are made possible by Runaway Tours and Sixth Man Runaway. See, get it? Because he's got a song called Runaway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ever since we started Runaway Tours, it's given me such joy to entertain and tell stories of where my songs came from, he says. What I've realized after all these years is that my fans have found that these are not only my stories, but their own.
Yes.
Hundreds of people have gotten together every time we take off for a destination, and long-lasting friendships are born. We want to continue that tradition in Runaway's fully immersive vacation trip, so get ready and we'll see you there.
I hope he's doing okay. It seems kind of weird he'd want to go.
Doing fine.
I'm
sure he's doing fine.
It's just a little bit. He must be getting paid a lot of money.
Of course he's getting. Oh my
God. Norwegian can use a boost at this point.
Yeah. And I mean, it's his tour company, though. So that's another thing. I mean, so it says run, don't walk. Okay. Register for pre-sale right now at runawaytoparis.com.
Runaway to Paris. Okay.
Now, so you can actually see the prices.
August.
Okay. August 26th through the 30th.
I can't make the April one.
No, you can't?
No.
It's only 3 weeks away. I
have to host a bridal shower. I can't make it. Sorry.
Have somebody else host it. You want to meet John Bon Jovi.
It's in my house.
Oh, all right. Well, still, have somebody else host it. Bring somebody in. But so it's Runaway to Paris. Paris? To Paradise. Runaway to Paradise. Runawaytoparadise.com.
All right. I got it.
So you can check the prices out there.
And you're going to pay for it for me?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, considering what a big John Bon Jovi fan I am.
Can you imagine you on that cruise?
Oh, God. No, I can't imagine me on that cruise. And it says, are you a Bon Jovi fan? Does this sound like a vacation that you would want to go to? Let us know in the comment section. This is from the website
don't
that we
took. Don't you dare.
No, I won't. But anyway, so there you go. You can set sail with John Bon Jovi.
Okay.
And 2,200 of his other fans.
Got enough vacation time stored up.
All right.
I'm looking into it.
I'm glad. See, I knew I had to let you know about this.
My husband's going to be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm sure he
he's staying home anyway.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's an option for you Bon Jovi fans out there. You can
thanks, Nick. Calling my girlfriends right now.
Okay, call them all up.
Seriously,
I got to say, Mary, you're absolutely right. I don't think there's going to be one man on either of these cruises.
Just the waiters and everybody.
And the band and the
Suburbians.
Yeah, the Kings of Suburbia band. It's a very popular backup band.
They're taking them from the Western Burbs.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, you can get your Bon Jovi cruise going and let us know if you're going to go, Mary.
Very excited.
You can file some reports exclusively for my show.
Oh, I bet you'll
okay,
let
cool.
me.
Thanks, yeah. Mary. Okay. All right, there you go. I had to tell Mary about the Bon Jovi thing. Now, you know what else, Mary, is that if they have a Robbie Benson cruise, that's it. It's all over,
oh,
I would imagine.
Oh, man.
If they have the Robbie Benson cruise, you're going to... if it was in April, you'd quit.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, okay. For sure. Heck with vacation time. Heck with the shower.
Who cares?
Sorry, Rachel, my niece.
All right, we'll break here. We will come back. We're back tomorrow for Wild Card Wednesday. Much more. We're going to talk about, we're talking with the people who run one of the only video stores that's left in the world, correct?
Well, at least in Chicago.
Yeah. So I didn't even know that that was a thing, but it is a thing. And we'll talk about that and much more coming up on the show. Right now, let's break because the news is up after this.